From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it is the New York hero, Tiz the Law and Manny Franco, to win the Belmont Stakes.
A desperate finish. Rags to riches and Carlin. They're coming down to the wire. It's going to be very close. And it's going to be a filly in the Belmont. Rags to riches has beaten Carlin.
Easy goer gets clear by four. Sunday Silence remains in second. La Voyageur, the horse from France, is third. It's New York's Easy goer in front.
He's just perfect. And now he's just immortal. Justify is the 13th Triple Crown winner.
Welcome to the Equine Forum.
Kent DeSormo imploring real quiet to hold on. Victory Gallop, a final surge. It's going to be very close. Here's the wire. It's too close to call. Was it real quiet or was it Victory Gallop? A picture is worth a thousand words. This photo is worth $5 million.
And on the outside, Taprit. Taprit has taken the lead. Taprit and Irish Warcry come down to the line together. It is Taprit and Jose Ortiz in the Belmont Stakes.
And Pine Bluff is all out on the lead. AP Indy is right there with him. It's very tight. My Memoirs is full of run, but AP Indy surges to victory in the Belmont Stakes.
American Foe is finally the one. American Foe has won the Triple Crown.
Now, here's Mike Pena.
No Triple Crown on the line? Who cares? Happy Belmont Stakes Day, HRN Nation, and welcome to the show that launched this network, the Equine Forum, and it is right here on your official radio home of the 153rd Belmont Stakes, the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, in the saddle with you once again for the next 3 hours, right up until 11 a.m. Eastern. And for those of you who are like me on this Saturday morning and say, who gives a flying you-know-what that there's no Triple Crown on the line this year? And for those of you who are like me and you say the Belmont Stakes is still an American classic and there are still 9 graded stakes to take in later today, 8 of those, by the way, are grade ones. If that's the way you're thinking on this Saturday morning, then you have tuned your radio to the right place. There are 3 win and you're in Breeders' Cup Challenge races on this afternoon's program. You have the Jiper for the Turf Sprint Division, the Ogden Phipps for the Distaff, and the Hillendale Metropolitan Handicap for the Dirt Mile. Later today, I'm going to introduce a brand new segment on the Equine Forum, which you will hear each week all the way through the Breeders' Cup on November 5th and 6th. It's called Road to the Breeders' Cup, and each week I'm going to visit with an owner, a trainer, a breeder, or an industry professional with ties to racing's championship days. And quite often, on a Belmont Stakes day such as this, think about it, when there is no opportunity for a Triple Crown, the Belmont tends to take a back seat to those undercard races preceding it. I don't think that's the case this year. As a matter of fact, considering the short fields in the undercard stakes, and I know the Belmont is only a field of 8, but considering that you're looking at 6 in the Woody Stevens, 6 in the Acorn, 6 in the Ogden Phipps with yesterday's defection of Swiss Skydiver, and 6 in the Metropolitan Handicap, those are your marquee events, and you're talking about 6 horses in each of them. That's barring any scratches from those races later today. You have to say that the Belmont is the star attraction on this afternoon's card. Don't you? It has to be. Preakness winner Ron Bauer is in there. You have 5 horses who skipped the Preakness after running in the Derby 5 weeks ago. And they're not 5 scrubs either. We didn't just get these from the field and throw them into the race today. These are good horses. You have third place finisher Hot Rod Charlie. Maybe soon to be Derby runner-up Hot Rod Charlie, but I'll get to that story later in the show. You have fourth place finisher and beaten favorite Essential Quality, the juvenile champion from last year. You have the Santa Anita Derby winner Rock Your World, who was eliminated, lost all chance at the start of the Kentucky Derby 5 weeks ago. You have Florida Derby winner, Known Agenda, and Wood Memorial upsetter, Bourbonic. Those are the five that ran in the Kentucky Derby, skipped the Preakness, and come here as fresh horses for the test of the champion. That has been a very productive path to take if you want to win the Belmont in recent years. If I'm not mistaken, I was doing some research yesterday during our production meeting for this afternoon's coverage of the Belmont Stakes. Tom Leach, the voice of the UK Wildcats, will be part of the coverage team along with Anthony Stabile. And Tom and I were talking, and we walked back through, I believe it's 10 of the past 20 Belmont winners. 50% skipped the Preakness and went on and won the Belmont. Yeah, make no mistake, the Belmont Stakes is the headliner on this Belmont Stakes Day. Our exclusive radio coverage this afternoon comes your way in partnership with NBC Sports Audio Network. It begins at 5 o'clock Eastern. You can tune in on a multitude of affiliates across the country. You can tune in right here on Sirius 219, XM 201. And as with all of our programming, you can stream us live at horseracingradio.net. So if you're not near an affiliate, if you don't have SiriusXM, by the way, SiriusXM right now, free for everybody. So no excuse. You should be tuning into the Belmont on Sirius 219, XM 201. Pretty cool stuff there. I think it's the next 4 or 5 days that you get SiriusXM for free. So make sure you check that out and tell your friends, if they don't have it yet, to head over there and make sure they check that out and listen to the Belmont Stakes beginning at 5 o'clock Eastern. So here's what's coming up today. You have 8:15 Eastern in about 8 minutes from right now. I'm going to welcome our very own Beast of the Belmont, Anthony Stabile, to preview all of today's action at Belmont. As you know, Anthony is part of the Talking Horses program with Andy Serling up at NYRA. Certainly has his finger on the pulse of everything happening with the New York Racing Association and Belmont Park. And, of course, you can hear the Big A on our programming throughout the week, too, with Race Day, presented by Twin Spires every Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, 3 to 6 Eastern. 8:35 this morning, I'm going to welcome former trainer, now jockey agent, Kieran McLaughlin. He's going to be here to take a look back on his most memorable Belmont Stakes days. Keep in mind, it's 5 years, five-year anniversary of Frosted and that record-setting performance in the Met Mile. We'll talk to Kieran about Frosted and about so many other memories he has from Belmont Stakes days. And he's going to share his thoughts on the horses that jockey Luis Saez will be aboard later today. 9 o'clock, I'm going to take a break from all the Belmont conversation and going to be joined by Byron King from the Blood Horse to discuss the latest developments surrounding Kentucky Derby winner Medina Spirit and his Hall of Fame trainer Bob Baffert. 9:20, Patrick O'Neill will be with me, the nephew of trainer Doug O'Neill and owner of Hot Rod Charlie. We'll talk about their Belmont contender. 9:40, you'll hear from trainer Todd Pletcher talking about his three contenders in today's Belmont Stakes. 10 o'clock, I kick off hour three of today's show with a segment you absolutely will not want to miss. Retired jockey Sean Clancy goes in the room for a one-on-one conversation with Hall of Famer and Triple Crown winner Steve Coffin. Again, that comes up at 10 o'clock. Do not miss it. 10:20, Kurt Becker is going to take you on a stroll through racing history presented by Lane Zen and Keeneland. And at 10:40, it is the debut of our brand new weekly segment, Road to the Breeders' Cup. I'll be joined by the man who saddled 4 Breeders' Cup winners last year en route to a champion trainer title. That's trainer Brad Cox, and he'll preview all of his runners on today's program. He's loaded, not just essential quality, but he has a plethora of top contenders in the stakes races leading up to the Belmont Stakes. So looking forward to talking with Brad going down the road to the Breeders' Cup at 10:40 Eastern time. Poll question, you can go to at HRRN on Twitter. You can go to Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. And if you don't do social media, just email me your response, mike@horseracingradio.net. Who is your pick to win the 153rd Belmont Stakes? And here are your choices. We'll give you the three favorites: Ron Bauer, Essential Quality, Hot Rod Charlie, and the fourth category, Other. And if you choose other, please let me know which horse you think is going to win today. So you get Rombauer, Essential Quality, Hot Rod Charlie, or other. This, top to bottom, field of eight. Yes, I know there's a couple of long shots in here, but for the most part, the top six, let's say. You can take those top six and run this race 20 times, and I'll bet you that it comes out pretty even. That wouldn't shock me a bit. In terms of, you know, Rombauer wins a few. Essential Quality gets a couple. Hot Rod Charlie gets a couple. Rock Your World probably wins a few. You could do it. Known Agenda, right? Known Agenda for Todd Pletcher. Take those horses, put them into a hat, and I think you have the makings for a really good Belmont Stakes this afternoon. So, again, who is your pick to win the 153rd Belmont? Let me know. Rombauer, Essential Quality, Hot Rod Charlie, or other. And if you choose that one, please specify at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, and email the show, Mike@horseracingradio.net. All right, I'm going to get to another break. When I come back, I welcome the Beast of the Belmont, the Big A, Anthony Stabile. It kicks off a very busy Belmont Day edition of the Equine Forum on HRRN.
The Spring Summer Meet is live now at Gulfstream Park. Live racing Thursday through Sunday through September 26th. Look forward to the Summit of Speed on Saturday, July 3rd, and the FTBOA Florida Sire Stakes Series, which begins July 31st. Stay in on the action from the comfort of your mobile phone using First Bet, the official app of Gulfstream Park. For the stakes schedule, tips and analysis, and seat reservations, visit GulfstreamPark.com. On-site tickets are limited, so book your seats now.
When it's time to paint the fences and barns, think Farm Paint. At Farm Paint, you get the industry's best coatings and paints factory direct at low, low prices. Farm Paint is your source for quality paints, roof coatings, dustless arena footings, and more. You can purchase online or drop into a Farm Paint store near you with locations in Heart of Bluegrass Country at 700 Phillips Lane in Lexington, Kentucky, Columbus, Ohio, and Sandusky, Ohio. Buy factory direct and save at farmpaint.com. That's farmpaint.com.
Hi, this is Joe Nicholson. During these difficult times, the team at Nicholson Insurance Agency sends best wishes to all for good health. We can all look forward to better times ahead when this pandemic is behind us. But in the meantime, we need to stay safe. Although the staff at Nicholson Insurance is working from home, phone calls into the office are forwarded so that service remains intact. Customer service professionals continue to be ready, willing, and able to help you with your insurance needs, whether it be equine, farm, home, auto, business, or life. Several of Nicholson Insurance Agency's companies are returning portions of auto premiums because of reduced travel during the isolation period, which I think is the right thing to do. Please call 859-224-7080, Nicholson Insurance Agency. Thank you.
Pin Oak Studs Alternation ranks highly among Kentucky's fourth crop sires by percentage of black type winners from runners. With nearly $5.5 million in earnings to date, Alternation was represented by five black type horses in 2020. His brilliant Kentucky Oaks winner, Serengeti Empress, won the Grade 1 Ballerina at Saratoga and was runner up in the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint. First or second in six Grade 1 events, Serengeti Empress amassed over $2.1 million. Alternation stands at Pin Oak Stud.
This is Florent Giroux, and you are listening to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
California Chrome is coming down the center of the racetrack, but it's Tonalist with the narrow lead. California Chrome is there, wicked strong, late bit on the far outside. Commissioner hanging tough down toward the rail. Time ticking away in the Triple Crown. Commissioner down inside. Tonalist between horses. California Chrome laboring late. Here's the wire, and it's a photo finish that goes to Tonalist. Tonalist does it. Commissioner was second. Medal count was third.
There's some kind of a beast out there.
There is some kind of a beast out there, and there is a beast with us here on the Equine Forum this morning, the Big A, Anthony Stabile, the self-proclaimed Beast of the Belmont. And every time I have him on, on Belmont Stakes Day, we have to replay that Tonalist call because that was one of the great beast calls of all time. And the Big A, Anthony Stabile, joining me now here on the Equine Forum. Looking forward to this visit. Big A, welcome to the program, my friend.
Beast.
What's up, Beast?
We got to give commissioners some love in that call, too, because you can't have a three, as Ed DeRosa would say, you can't have a $344 exacto without the second horse, too, Baron. So, yeah, that was that was my first Belmont on the network back in 2014. Pretty amazing. It's been 7 years, almost 8 years now. So, yeah, looking forward to today. It is we had a heck of a couple of days of weather. And I have to tell you, as I'm about a mile and a half from beautiful Belmont Park, it is gorgeous today. The unofficial track superintendent, Mark Hennig, tweeted out a picture of the racetrack this morning. It looks beautiful. I wouldn't be surprised if we're fast by post time. Turf courses are labeled good. Everything's on the turf for Belmont Stakes Day 153.
Yeah, good. Yeah, yesterday was kind of a mess for a while there. The sun came out toward the end of the day, but, yeah, kind of a mess. I'm glad to hear you say that things probably going to be dry and fast by the time we get to post time. It is an early post today, too, right?
11:35, first post, yeah. The turf course is, like I said, labeled good right now. There was a 46-minute delay before the bed of roses yesterday because we had some thunderstorms roll through here. And then on top of that, we had 3 inches of rain. I was talking to Brian from the maintenance crew, from the track crew, last weekend. We had over 3 inches of rain on the turf course from last Friday to Memorial Day. So all of that rain, and then combined with the inch plus we got the last few days, the fact that these courses are labeled good, and those times on the turf yesterday, Mike, they corroborate the course listing. They listed it as yielding yesterday. You don't often see this courses mislabeled the other way. More often than not, they'll say it's good and it's really closer to soft or yielding. Yesterday it was yielding, and those times were playing like good or firm turf. So the turf courses dried out nicely. And again, happy we have good course conditions and everything's on their intended surface today.
Nine graded. I'm culminating with the Belmont Stakes, which will run shortly before 7 o'clock Eastern time. Eight of those are grade ones, Big A. And I reference the fact that several of the grade ones are not great betting races because of the fact that they have very small fields. You have 6 in the Woody Stevens, 6 in the Acorn, 6 in the Ogden Phipps, 6 in the Metropolitan Handicap. Now, barring any other scratches, so they're going to be short fields. With that said, I also mentioned the fact that I feel the Belmont, which quite often when there's no Triple Crown on the line, can be overshadowed on a day like this by some of those undercard races because the fields aren't all that big in some of the supporting events. I think the Belmont, just by the pure quality of the race, first of all, is undoubtedly the star attraction again today.
Yes, no question about it. And I'll say this, as Mr. Miyagi said in Karate Kid, trust quality, not quantity. I got no problem betting some of those shorter fields because I don't like the favorites today. So, that's beauty's in the eye of the beholder. I'm fine with those short fields when there's three and four to five shots hanging on the morning line that I'm going to swing against. But yes, the Belmont Stakes. It's a very interesting race this year. You got the 5 holdovers from the Derby. You have Preakness winner Ron Bauer. You have the new shooter, there's always one, Overtook, will take that role all by himself this year. And, Todd Pletcher is going to take 3 swings at it to look for his 4th success Todd's had in the race. It's not Woody Stevens-esque with 5 in a row from 82 to 86, but 3 wins, 6 seconds. We talked to Todd earlier this week on race day. If he could, if this was Wheel of Fortune and he could buy a vowel, and instead of buying a vowel, he could buy 2 lengths in the Belmont Stakes, he'd have 6 of them. So, yeah. You have to respect his horses coming in. You got the 2-year-old champ of Central Quality, who, if he doesn't get bumped at the start, tell you what, my mom taught me almost everything I know about handicapping. She thinks we'd be looking at a Triple Crown possibility today if a Central Quality didn't get bumped at the start in the Kentucky Derby. So, you have a horse that he's as legit as they come. But plenty of options to take a swing against him today. It's a really fun race and a good way to wrap up the traditional Triple Crown this year.
Essential Quality, definitely a deserved favorite in the Belmont. Not only was he bumped at the start, he had a wide trip, still, you know, was beaten to length for all of it. He is a deserved favorite. Brad Cox did the right thing, not pushing him to get him into the Preakness, targeting the Belmont. And he said all along, really from his very first workout, that this is a horse that looks like a Belmont horse to him. So he's in the right spot.
Turned to his assistant and said that after the first published workout, said the horse will win the Belmont Stakes.
Yeah.
And it's weird because when you see a horse move as well as he apparently did in the morning, I mean, for you to think you're going to win a Triple Crown race after the first breeze, more often than not, you're going to say Kentucky Derby. But as a son of Tappet and the three winners, Tonalist Creator, Taprit, couple of seconds with Frosted to American Pharaoh, my boy Tacitus to Sir Winston a couple of years ago, I mean, with that pedigree, or just, you know, I mean, you don't even say pedigree. With that sire, you feel like you're getting your money in the middle with the best hand. And there's no knocks on him. I mean, his knock is his price. And that has nothing to do with what he does on the racetrack. If his knock's his price, you know, he's got a really good chance to get the money today. My one problem in the Derby was I know he had the wide trip, but maybe the wide trip helped him. There's so much traffic and so many bad trips in the Derby that maybe getting bumped at the start, but getting bumped at the start is never a good thing, but maybe that wide trip was better for him, and he just couldn't finish up. It was just hard to pass that day at Churchill Downs too, so he would be the one out of the Derby that out of the Derby photo finish, the four in the line together. I want him a lot more than I would want Hot Rod Charlie.
So, okay, so is it Essential Quality for you, or do you think that he could potentially, or if there is an upsetter to Essential Quality, who are you looking at in that direction?
I like Known Agenda. I think Known Agenda, you know, the rail in Kentucky on Derby Day is not as bad as it used to be because of the new gate, but it's still the rail in a 20-horse field, and he broke alertly. And then they came past the eighth pole the first time, and what happens in a 19-horse field is horses start to drop over, and he lost all his position. He went from 5th to 17th in the blink of an eye, and then he had to make up all that ground. And, you know, he didn't find a ton of trouble, but enough to stop his momentum a little bit. And then the last one was when Soup and Sandwich backed up, approaching the far turn. He was making a move along the inside, and that's when he kind of had his momentum really stopped. And for me, he kept running through the three pauses. He kind of reminds me of Taprit a little bit. So I'm going to take a shot with him. Early money, I think there's $250,000 in the pool. He's 5-1. Essential Quality is 8-5, I believe, as we speak. So I'm going to take a shot with Known Agenda. I think it's him in Essential Quality. And perfectly honest with you, I think it's a long way back to the rest of them. I don't want Ron Bauer off for 3 weeks. I don't really want Hot. I mean, if anybody had a better trip in the Kentucky Derby than Hot Rod Charlie, show it to me. I just look to me like he flattened the last 16th of a mile, and if I don't want him at a mile and a quarter, I probably don't want him at a mile and a half.
Any scenario where Rock Your World gets out front and takes the field wire to wire?
Yeah, you just said it. Joel Rosario, there's probably not a better rider in the country at doling out speed in these distance races. He steals an awful lot of them here the last few years going long on the turf. And I could see that. I just wonder if going the mile and a half, is Hot Rod Charlie a little bit more aggressive with the success he had in the Louisiana Derby? I'm going to give you the real wild card in here. Ricardo Santana Jr. is riding France Go de Hina. And I would not be surprised if he is just on some wild mission to try to bottom this field out. We've seen horses like Commendable and Vitara at huge prices go wire to wire in the Belmont Stakes. I'm not saying he can do that. What I'm saying is, you know, back in 2019, Jovian Tax were 1-2 around the track, and they wound up running 3-4 behind Sir Winston and Tacitus. So speed horses that don't look like they belong have had a good deal of success in the race over the last 15 to 20 years. I would imagine he's just going to try and be aggressive, but I can see Rocky. If that doesn't happen, yeah, Rocky World can just go to the top. And maybe just keep throwing 12s at them. I don't know. That's the only other. He's the only other horse I would consider making a little bit of a turnaround with Known Agenda. 6-2, 6-7 for me.
Yeah, but I will take charge out of a Curlin mare. So Francisco de Ina has a pedigree that says mile and a half. We'll see if he has the talent to pull it off later today in the test of the champion. Would be a massive, massive upset. I figure he'll probably be the longest shot in the race. He is on the morning line, and we'll see how that all works out. Talking with the Big A, the beast of the Belmont, Anthony Stabile, here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Beast, just a couple of minutes here before I have to get to our Lexus Legends of the Turf, but I do want to take a look at a couple of the undercard stakes. You said there are some favorites that you are not high on that you'll play against later today. Which racers are those?
I'm going to take a little swing with Bonnie South today in the Ogden Phipps, Latruska, and She Dares the Devil. They're the two marquee names that are left. Valiant is going to scratch, and Swiss Skydiver spiked 104 feet yesterday. She's going to come out. They're both need to lead types, Latruska and She Dares the Devil. So I got to imagine they're going to go at it go at it early, and I just hope Joel Rosario and Bonnie South can pick up the pieces. And I like Silver State today in the Met Mile. I know Nick Scho's coming in with the four big wins and a little bit of the toast over. I thought she still ran okay in Saudi Arabia. But those were all two-turn races under pretty optimal conditions. He's got to go one turn now, and I think Silver State's one-turn races to start the five-race win streak he's on were actually better than the two-turn races. I think he'll get the job done today at 7-2 or 3-1.
Have we heard anything from Todd Pletcher as to who will replace Irad Ortiz Jr. aboard Known Agenda today?
We have not. I am surprised by that. If I were a betting man, I would tell you in order, Jose Ortiz, Mike Smith, Javier Castellano would be the three options. I know Todd had said he was waiting to see if there were any defections this morning. I think the most obvious one there would be Ron Baller, John Velasquez, and Todd have won close to 1,700 races together, so I would imagine they'd be the two. He'd be the one he's waiting to see if anything happens there, but if I were a betting man, I would say Jose Ortiz winds up on the horse.
Yeah, thank goodness that Erod is okay. That was a weird, weird scenario the other day when he turned into the stretch in front and the horse kind of bobbled. I was trying to figure out exactly what happened. I kept going back and watching the replay, and he came off, and his brother Jose, that was a great video that somebody posted, Jose running down the stretch to meet Erod and make sure that he was okay. Thankfully, he is. He spent the night in the hospital but was home shortly thereafter, and was great to see him posting on social media that he was okay.
Yeah, thank God. Thank God it wasn't anything worse.
Yeah, yeah. All right, the Beast of the Belmont, the Big A, he'll be part of the coverage team this afternoon. 5 o'clock Eastern is when our coverage begins. Myself, Anthony, and Tom Leach, the voice of the UK Wildcats, all together to bring you coverage of the Test of the Champion. Anthony, appreciate the visit, my friend. Happy Belmont Day, and we'll talk this afternoon.
Happy Belmont Day, Baron. We'll talk to you at 5 o'clock.
All right. Beast of the Belmont, Anthony Stabile. When I come back, you're going to hear from another guy who was turned into a beast on Belmont Stakes Day when he was training and now hoping to do it as a jockey's agent. That is Kieran McLaughlin. That comes your way right after your Lexus Legends of the Turf, brought to you every Saturday at this time by Lexus of Lexington.
On an early June day in 1945, a set of circumstances was culminated and climaxed by a win in the Kentucky Derby. In 1943, just before the opening of the very first yearling sale ever held at Keeneland, a contractor from Alabama was lolling about the lobby of Lexington, Kentucky's Hotel Lafayette. He met a fellow contractor from Tennessee who asked what he was doing there. The tall Alabaman, Mr. Fred C. Hooper, said, quote, "I thought I'd buy a couple of yearlings and find out what this racehorse business is all about." His friend, J. Warfield Rogers of Memphis, Tennessee, had been racing and breeding for some time and, of course, offered his assistance. Hooper asked if Rogers knew of a good trainer. Mr. Rogers said indeed he did, and Hooper then asked if he could be introduced to him. Rogers and Hooper met at the sale the next day, and as Ivan Park strolled by, Rogers indicated that he was one of the trainers he would certainly recommend. The two were introduced and spent the rest of the day together with no agreement reached between them, looking at yearlings going into the auction arena, but neither bidding nor buying. They knew absolutely nothing of each other, but took the pains to carefully check each other out to mutual satisfaction, I might add, and the next afternoon, August 11, 1943, They sat together at the sale pavilion and patiently waited until the 34th yearling was led into the sales arena. Hooper jumped into the action and quietly and determinedly bid to $10,200, for which he got the colt in which he was interested. He was now the owner of a high-priced thoroughbred. That youngster was put in the hands of former riding great Ivan Park to train, and on June 9, 1945, 2 years later, the casual introduction came to its climax. It was Derby Day in Louisville. 70,000 fans on hand neath the hallowed Twin Spires to watch the 71st run for the Roses on a very muddy racetrack. Hooper's horse was installed, too, in the crowded old-fashioned paddock at Churchill, and Hooper and Park stood in front of it greeting well-wishers as their horse approached. The son of Sir Galahad III had his front legs bandaged, and the padding covered an extraordinarily thick padding of cotton, which stretched from pastern to just above the knee. As he passed bystanders, there was a strong odor of medication. Jeep, owned by Colonel C.V. Whitney, was in stall 3, and Colonel Whitney, nattily attired in his army uniform, bowed to Mr. Hooper by a way of exchanging the social amenities of the moment. Ivor Balding, manager of the Whitney farm, exchanged a few pleasantries with Mr. Hooper as well. Tommy Piat visited every stall and spoke to every owner and trainer. At stall 7, Piat chatted with Warren Wright, who had pot of luck in the field. Wright congratulated Piat on Come and Go's win in the Kentucky Oaks. Ben Jones, Wright's trainer, came up and said, quote, "If we can beat the Hooper colt, we can win it. I don't think we can. His work the other day was marvelous, and he didn't even draw a deep breath," end of quote. The order from the paddock judge came to saddle up. Bandages were removed from Hooper's horse, revealing blister scars on the ankles, and the strong smell of medication was unmistakable. The ankles looked good, but they had obviously been sweated. Trainer Ivan Park's hands were trembling while saddling the horse, Mr. Hooper standing calmly with arms crossed and watching his stalwart. "Riders up," came the call, and the rest, my friends, is history. On that muddy racetrack with 70,000 howling fans on hand, on June 9, 1945, Eddie Arcaro guided that horse to an uncontested wire-to-wire six-length win in rather easy fashion. That horse, the very first purchased by Fred C. Hooper, trained by Ivan Park, had fulfilled a dream. That thoroughbred, my friends, was Hoop Jr., and his owner's and trainer's story provide, indeed, a great moment in thoroughbred racing.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and innovative technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. This is Mike Pena, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience driving any Lexus model is unparalleled. Visit Lexus of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for over 15 years. Experience the enjoyment of Lexus and the enjoyment of shopping Lexus of Lexington. The people there truly make the difference. Long-tenured, friendly, knowledgeable team members, no pressure, no hassle. I promise, it's not your typical dealership experience. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, and Lexus of Lexington continues to sponsor Keeneland's Raven Run Stakes each fall. So from one horse person to another, the next best thing to being around horses is driving a Lexus. Visit Lexus of Lexington and tell them Mike sent you.
Fans, join us early on Saturday as the third and final jewel in racing's Triple Crown, the Belmont Stakes, will be simulcast from New York along with a tremendous undercard. Admission gates will open at 8 a.m. with a clubhouse opening at 9 a.m. Infield admission gates will open at 10 a.m. That's all on Belmont Stakes Day this Saturday. First live race post time on Saturday and Sunday will be at 1 o'clock. And please note, there will be a mandatory payout in Sunday's 20-cent Rainbow Pick 6 jackpot. Although Santa Anita is now open to the public, please visit SantaAnita.com/open for reserved seating, as walk-up admission is not yet available. And fans, Santa Anita's grandstand paddock room has been reopened. Please visit our website for details. If you can't join us in person, all of Santa Anita's races are still available free of charge at SantaAnita.com/live, and you can watch and wager via First Bet. That's First.com/bet.
Pin Oak Studs Alternation ranks highly among Kentucky's fourth crop sires by percentage of black type winners from runners. With nearly $5.5 million in earnings to date, Alternation was represented by five black type horses in 2020. His brilliant Kentucky Oaks winner, Serengeti Empress, won the Grade 1 Ballerina at Saratoga and was runner-up in the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint. First or second in six Grade 1 events, Serengeti Empress amassed over $2.1 million. Alternation stands at Pin Oak Stud.
Hi, this is Penelope Miller, and you're listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Upstart and Blofeld anchor down in front as they come to the top of the stretch. It is anchor down joined to the outside by Frosted. And Frosted has gone on by and he has exploded. He is absolutely blowing his competition away. Oh my goodness, look at Frosted today. Frosted 10 in front. Frosted is absolutely wrapped in the Met Mile. He was wrapped up in a final time of 1 minute 32.73 seconds. Anchor down, upstart, a mean splatter. They were a mile behind him.
14 and a quarter lengths to be exact. That was Larry Colmus with the call of the 2016 running of the Metropolitan Handicap. Nobody better than Frosted. That is the largest winning margin in the history of the race. His final time of 132.73 has yet to be topped, and he is a horse that was so good for trainer Kieran McLaughlin, who is now retired. He has gone back to being a jockey's agent for jockey Luis Saez, who had a good day yesterday, looking for an even better day on this Saturday. Welcome back to the Equine Forum. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on Belmont Morning. And so is Kieran McLaughlin. He joins me now. Kieran, good morning, my friend.
Good morning. I never get tired of listening to that call. That was an incredible day of racing for us.
Oh, how awesome was that performance? I mean, we hear the call, and I think maybe we even appreciate it more now than we did 5 years ago because of just how brilliant Frosted became as a racehorse, but how brilliant that one singular performance really was.
Yes, it was brilliant, and I have to give credit to my brother Neil and his wife Trish and Rob Massey, who got on him. He trained right-handed always at Green Tree on synthetic. He had been to Dubai, and he came down here and just ran an amazing race, and he's a successful stallion now, so it's fun to follow along with his next chapter in life.
Do you remember what was going through your mind as you were watching him pull away and dominate that race the way he did?
It was just incredible. My wife and kids were with me. We were there, you know, watching it, and it just was incredible. It was almost like you couldn't believe your eyes, and a great call of the race. But it was a fabulous race, and it was great to win the mile. We knew he could run all distances, which is great for a stallion. But the Met Mile helps, you know, make a stallion or help make a stallion.
That wasn't your only big win in 2016. You also had Courting, right, who took the Ogden Phipps. Wasn't that the same day?
Who was that? Sorry.
Cavorting.
Yes. A very nice filly, one of the best fillies that I ever trained for a great outfit in Stone Street. And I always said it was nice. Two owners were happy of mine because she was Bernardini. And every time she won, Godolphin and Darley, people were happy. And Stone Street was happy. So it was always fun to win with her.
Yeah, it was a big day. Hard to believe that was 5 years ago. Things have changed quite a bit for you now. I mentioned the fact that you've retired from training. You are now the jockey agent for Luis Saez, who got another Great Stakes victory yesterday. Congratulations on that one.
Yeah, thanks. It's a really neat story, neat filly. You know, Grand Motion does a great job in his team, and Alex Campbell has been around forever in our game and a great owner, and it's so nice to see him have such a nice filly and do so well. We were hoping to win the Breeders' Cup for him last year in Lexington, his home, but it didn't quite work out. But it's great to have such a nice filly, and for anybody, but it's nice that we get to ride her for some very good people.
Yeah, he had that ride timed perfectly, too. I guess you could say the finish line came just in the nick of time, because the horse on the outside that ended up second was closing like, well, I guess closing like Jazzle on the outside, right?
Yeah, she was closing very fast. And you never know about soft ground and, you know, how soft is it. And she broke like, it looked like a false start almost. She broke so fast and got to the lead quickly. And Luis loves the filly. He does a great job on her, and he has a lot of confidence in her. But, whew, the wire needed to get there. One or two more jumps, we were in trouble.
Talking with trainer Kieran McLaughlin here on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Kieran, I'd be remiss, and I will talk more about Luis with you here in just a minute, but I'd be remiss if I had you on the program on Belmont Stakes Day on the 15-year anniversary of your Belmont win with Jazzle and didn't ask you about that day, because that, boy, that has to bring back memories too, doesn't it?
Yes, it was a great win for Shadwell and Team McLaughlin, and it was just fabulous to win a classic, an American classic. We had been fourth a couple times, second in the Derby, but to win the Belmont was special because both of my children were born and raised here in New York, and that was mainly my headquarters in New York training. So it was a great to win. And Shadwell, Sheikh Hamdan, and Rashid Al-Maktoum, who just passed away, was a close friend and a great client, and it was fabulous to win that race for him.
Todd Pletcher talked about his success in the Belmont Stakes before the Preakness, and one thing he told me, Kieran, was that his program has, you know, he likes to win at home, and his home is New York as well, but his program has always been geared toward, you know, getting horses to the Derby, and then he loves the Belmont Stakes because it is in New York, and it, you know, the mile and a half, and everything he's always done with his horses has fit through his program for the Belmont, and I think that's why he's been so successful. But it sounds like you were the same way. You really enjoyed winning on your home turf, if you will, up in New York.
Yes, Belmont, you know, a special place, and Saratoga is a special place, and it's great racing. The, you know, probably the best racing in the country for, you know, a few months. And it's tough to win races, so it makes it that much more rewarding. And Todd has three in today we have to worry about, but he does a great job.
Yeah, well, you're going to be aboard the Juvenile Champion, Essential Quality. Many people thinking that Essential Quality was the best horse in the Kentucky Derby. He had a bit of a rough beginning, I guess. He got bounced around a little bit, had a wide trip. Share your thoughts on that effort by Essential Quality in the Kentucky Derby.
Yeah, there's no question he was the best three-year-old in the Kentucky Derby and unlucky not to win. We were happy to get post 14. We didn't want to be down inside and have a trouble trip. So we got banged pretty hard at the gate, at the start. And Luis felt like it bothered him a little bit more than you could see, but then he was four wide, five wide, pretty much throughout, stayed out of trouble, which was fine, but we did run like 60, 68 feet further than the winner, and that's hard to do and win the Derby, but he definitely was the best horse, and hopefully we can get lucky and win today so to make up for the rough trip in the Derby.
What did Luis tell you after he got off of Essential Quality in the Kentucky Derby?
He just said it was unlucky to start and just said he was getting out a little bit and he had never done that. And that's why partially he was a little bit wider than he wanted him. He couldn't save ground because he was leaning out on both turns. And he thought that it might have happened at the start when the horse hit him so hard leaving there. So, but he said he's a great horse and he loves him, and the mile and a half should suit him well.
You know, Kieran, you told me just when you announced your retirement, you were kind enough to join me for a full hour visit on our Wednesday Trainer Talk program, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. We've actually replayed that a few times because we've gotten such great response from your comments and that conversation. But you told me after we finished up that interview that that would probably be the last time that you ever join me on the radio, because nobody ever wants to talk to the jockey's agent. And I said, no, Kieran, I'm going to call you. We're going to talk about Luis at some point. So here we are. I kept my promise.
Yes, thank you very much. I enjoy it, and it's great to be talking about what I'm doing, but more importantly, about Luis and the horses that he's able to ride. So he's a great person and does a great job, a great jockey, and I really enjoy working with him. And it's great to be able to go out and see my friends and talk to everybody every day on the phone and try and keep riding the best horses.
Do you ever miss training?
Yes, I do at times, but I think now that I'm vaccinated and able to go out in the mornings, I can, again, see horses train and enjoy it and see friends, like I said, people. And a lot of owners or racing managers I still stay in touch with. So the horse part of it I miss, but I don't miss the regulations and the help issues and trying to – the expense of it all was, you know, it's very hard, you know, with H-2B visas and all the rest. But I miss it, but I enjoy what I'm doing. And I'm not missing racing because I'm watching every race every day, more now than training.
Yeah, I'm sure. You obviously wouldn't have taken this job and made this move if you weren't already high on Luis Saez. And you mentioned how great of a person he is, and he is. He's not a guy that we ever hear about getting into any trouble. He's a hardworking rider. He's one of the premier riders in the sport today. What have you learned about Luis as a rider and as a person since you took the job?
He's a great person, and he has a fabulous wife and three daughters, and he wants to be with them, and he's not a partier or go-out type of person. And he's a better jockey than I thought when I went to work for him. He amazes me sometimes how well he rides races and saves ground and understands or gets them, puts them in the right place to win. So he just gets along great with horses, and he loves what he does. And I don't have to worry about him if I ask him to be at Churchill Downs at 5:15 to work a horse, and he drove up from Lexington. He was there to work the horse at 5:15. Any morning I ask him to go, he's never been late or missed any. And he's a fabulous kid to work with, and I really enjoy it.
Yeah, fantastic comments from Kieran McLaughlin, my special guest here on the Equine Forum. Kieran, let's talk about some of the other horses that Luis will be aboard on the Belmont undercard today, and several. I mentioned 9 stakes races. 8 of those are grade ones. The grade one, Just a Game, Summer Romance for Charlie Appleby. How cool is that to be riding for Charlie Appleby?
Yeah, he's a great guy, and I was so happy to talk to him and try and get on either one of his fillies, and he thought this filly would suit Luis best, and she's going to be forwardly placed, but not, there's, you know, a runoff in the race, I think. So there's very fast filly in there and blowout. But we're happy just to ride for him. It might help that the turf is labeled good with all the rain yesterday. Might help the Europeans. You'd think it would. But, yeah, we're happy to ride for him. He's a really good guy. And, again, it's Godolphin, so that's neat.
Yeah, it's a great connection. The grade one Jiper Gregorian Chant, a British bred for Phil D'Amato, is the mount that Luis will be aboard in there. Tell me a little bit about Gregorian Chant.
Yeah, he's won his last 3, and he's been impressive. And they called me a few weeks ago to hold the race. Hope that he handles it, again, a little soft, but very nice horse. They do a great job. Phil D'Amato just does a great job, and it's always nice to ride for him. And so I think we have a good chance there.
How about the other grade one, Tulane Tryst in the Woody Stevens? What's the key to victory for Tulane Tryst?
Yeah, hopefully he can run with these. You know, there's a lot of speed in the race, so hopefully it works out. He can work out a good trip. Cherie DeVoe is doing very well this year. You know, fairly new trainer, won her first graded stake last week or 2 weeks ago at Churchill, and it's fun to ride for her. We were 3rd yesterday in a stake for her. So it's good outfit, and hopefully it works out, and there's a lot of speed, and we can make up some ground.
the Big A was with me in the previous segment. I have to call him Beast. It's Belmont Day. He wants to be called Beast of the Belmont. He gets mad when I don't do that. So the Beast of the Belmont, Anthony Stabile, was with me in the first segment of the program. And he said that Valiance was planning to scratch from the Ogden Phipps today. That's the mount that Luis is scheduled to be aboard. Is that true? Is Valiance coming out?
Yes, she is coming out. She had a temperature and Swiss skydivers coming out. So
yeah,
cut the field back. But, yeah, unlucky timing, and she's a very nice filly. We look forward to getting riding her later, but it was just bad timing.
Well, people listening will find out very quickly that Luis Saez is going to be busy on this Belmont Day. He also has Campaign for John Sadler in the Grade 2 Brooklyn Stakes. What can you tell me about Campaign?
Yeah, I spoke to John again a few weeks ago, and he was going to bring it back here. He's an old campaigner, you know, nice horse, older horse, a mile and a half. He likes. He put blinkers on just to probably, you know, help him out, focus a little bit. But he's a great trainer to ride for, and we're happy to be on the horse. So hopefully we get lucky.
Well, Kieran, you've had some huge Belmont Stakes days, as we learned at the very beginning of this conversation this morning. And let's hope that Luis Saez can somehow channel his inner Kieran McLaughlin and pull off a few victories later today. He has many opportunities, and he has the right man in his corner. So all the best. Good luck today and in the future with Luis Saez, and really appreciate you taking some time.
Thank you very much, Mike, and thank you for the support of our business. You all do a great job.
Thanks. Kieran McLaughlin here on HRRN, one of the classiest guys you will ever meet in the sport of thoroughbred racing. And, yeah, he has one of the classiest jockeys that you're ever going to meet. And let's see if they can make some magic later today at Belmont Park. When I come back, it is time to get you ready to bet the races with today's first bet, brought to you by our friends at First Bet. And then I'll get you set for hour number two. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, proud to once again be your home for the Triple Crown. Gainsway Stallion Caraconti is off to a strong start at stud. A leading sire amongst his crop by percentage of stakes horses, top runners by Caraconti include graded stakes winners Kenzai Warrior.
But Kenzai Warrior is sticking his head down and getting up. Kenzai Warrior wins the Horace Hill.
Sole Volante.
On the outside, Sole Volante runs by the leader. It's Sole Volante in front and going away.
Two-year-old stakes winner Spanish Love Affair.
16th to go, Spanish Love Affair almost home. Spanish Love Affair lives up to the hype and wins it 1-2.
And dual surface dynamo, Princess Grace.
16th to go, Princess Grace still in front. Pasta Plate is trying hard, but she's second to Princess Grace, streaking under the wire, the three-length winner.
A rising star with greatest stakes winners on both dirt and turf, Caraconti, standing at Gainsway.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony's Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony's Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at tonysteaksandseafood.com.
Spring Summer Meet is live now at Gulfstream Park. Live racing Thursday through Sunday through September 26th. Look forward to the Summit of Speed on Saturday, July 3rd, and the FTBOA Florida Sire Stakes Series, which begins July 31st. Stay in on the action from the comfort of your mobile phone using First Bet, the official app of Gulfstream Park. For the stakes schedule, tips and analysis, and seat reservations, visit GulfstreamPark.com. On-site tickets are limited, so book your seats now.
To be able to go back to the movies.
Introduce my family to my new girlfriend.
For my husband, who's been a chronic asthmatic his whole life.
So I can visit friends in a different state.
So I can take my granddaughter out to the park again.
So that I can hug my 85-year-old grandma again.
We each have our own reason for why we're getting vaccinated against COVID-19. What will yours be? Visit GetVaccineAnswers.org for information on the COVID-19 vaccines. It's up to you. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Hi, this is the Big A, Anthony Stabile, reminding you that Race Day, presented by Twin Spires, comes to you every Wednesday through Friday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern here on HRRN. Bobby Newman joins me for racing from tracks like Churchill Downs, Belmont Park, and Santa Anita. We'll also bring you interviews with all of the players, both big and small, in thoroughbred racing. You can tune in to Race Day, presented by Twin Spires, on Sirius 219, XM 201, or stream it live on your home for all of racing's biggest events at horseracingradio.net.
Hi, this is jockey Rajiv Maharaj, and I love listening to my friends on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
It is still affirmed as they come to the quarter pole. He's holding on to a head lead. Alidar is outside of him and challenging that lead. The two are heads apart, and Alidar's got a lead. Alidar put a head in front, right in the middle of the stretch. It's Alidar and Affirmed battling back along the inside. We'll test these two to the wire. Affirmed under a left-hand whip. Alidar on the outside driving. Affirmed and Alidar heads apart. Affirmed's got a nose in front as they come onto the wire.
Two to go. Steve looks bad on Evander. This is a fleet swing. Still at the boat victory here. He lengths 10 lengths clear from the second horse, Lord Society, 32 green leader. Theatrical hanging under pressure. Staying on it. Land right there. There's nothing to get anywhere here. His stable companion. That's Evander. Finish Steve Corbin. Steve's first Derby victory. Written out to the post. Staying home. Coming home well. One horse ring. And that's Evander.
That was exactly 36 years ago today, June 5th, 1985, that the kid, Steve Coffin, won the Epsom Derby aboard Slip Anchor and became the only American jockey to win both the English and the Kentucky Derbies. How about that? Pretty cool stuff from Steve Coffin. You're going to hear more from him coming up later in the program. Of course, 7 years prior to winning the Epsom Derby, he guided Affirmed to that victory in the Triple Crown over Alidar. And he took time earlier this week to visit with our Sean Clancy in our In the Room segment. That one-on-one conversation is one you won't want to miss. It comes up later this morning at 10 o'clock Eastern. So many of you will be placing wagers today, as you should, maybe on other tracks outside of Belmont Park, and that's good too, racing all over the country today. But it is time now to help you pick a winner with today's first bet.
And now, today's first bet.
Today's first bet comes in race 10 at Belmont Park, the Grade 1 Manhattan with a post of 538 Eastern. It is number 7, Channel Cat, 12-1 on the morning line. He has a 28% win projection from first bet and a 15-point spread between the race's top two choices. That's second highest on the card. He ranks first in 13 first bet factor categories, most in the race, and a likely major overlay. 12-1 on the morning line. First bet says that fair odds should be 5-2. Channel Cat upset the Grade 1 Man of War last out at 8-1, and he retains the services of Hall of Fame jockey John Velasquez, who won the Manhattan in 2013 aboard Point of Entry. Number 7, Channel Cat, in race 10 at Belmont, today's first bet. I'm back with more in 60 seconds, right after this word from First Bet.
Have you heard about the new handicapping and betting app that is sweeping the nation? It's called First Bet, and it puts the power of AI-assisted handicapping, seamless wagering, and live HD video in the palm of your hand. Thousands of bettors have already made First Bet their way to handicap, bet, and watch more than 300 of the world's top tracks. Isn't it time for you to join them? And when you give First Bet a try today, you can cash in on a huge welcome bonus. Sign up with promo code SPORTOFKINGS, all one word, and you will get $10 just for joining, as well as a 10% rebate, up to $500 for your first 30 days. With that much free cash on the line, what do you have to lose? Get started at first.com/bet. That's number 1, st.com/bet. And don't forget promo code SPORTOFKINGS when you sign up. And if you already have an ExpressBet account, you're way ahead of the game. Simply log into FirstBet using your username and password, and you're off to the races.
Up to 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with FirstBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void, or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Well, so many of you taking time to weigh in on the poll question today, really appreciate it. Keep the responses coming at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. If you don't do social media, email me your response, mike@horseracingradio.net. It's the question's pretty simple today. Who is your pick to win the 153rd Belmont Stakes? Gave you a few choices. Rombauer, Essential Quality, Hot Rod Charlie, or other. And if you choose somebody else, just let me know who it is. Known agenda, the lone vote outside of the top three so far. But right now it looks like Essential Quality, the favorite in the race, the likely favorite in the race, running away with it. 55% of you saying Essential Quality is the horse that's going to win the Belmont today. Let me know your thoughts again at HRRN on our Twitter page, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, and Mike at horseracingradio.net if you want to email me your replies. Coming up in hour number two, you're going to hear from Byron King. He'll kick it off in just a couple of moments. Byron with Blood Horse has been covering the situation surrounding Medina Spirit and Bob Baffert, and he'll update you on the latest developments there. Patrick O'Neill, the nephew of trainer Doug O'Neill, is going to be with me to talk about their Hot Rod Charlie coming up at 9:20. Of course, Patrick, the owner of Hot Rod Charlie. That should be a lot of fun. And at 9:40, at the end of the second half of the program, or second hour of the show, you will hear from trainer Todd Pletcher, who walks through all three of his contenders in today's Belmont Stakes. So an awful lot of things to get to. We'll do it next, right after I pause. 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, this is the Big A, Anthony Stabile, with this week's HRRN Racing Update. Today's 153rd running of the Belmont Stakes wraps the 2021 Triple Crown Trail as two-year-old champion Essential Quality takes on Preakness winner Rombauer and six others going a mile and a half at beautiful Belmont Park in the oldest and longest jewel of racing's Triple Crown. Nine stakes in all, eight of them grade ones, make up what is arguably the best day of racing, save the Breeders' Cup World Championships, each and every year. Approximately 12,000 fans are expected in attendance at Belmont for the test of the champion. Happy Belmont Day, everyone. That's your HRRN Racing Update. Now let's send it back to host Mike Penna for Hour 2 of the Equine Forum.
Welcome back. No Triple Crown, who cares? That's what I say. Started the show saying it about an hour ago. I'm going to continue to say it. It is a great day of racing in Elmont, New York. You heard from the Big A, Anthony Stabile, the Beast of the Belmont, in the first interview, first segment of the show this morning, and he told you that the track looks like it very well could be fast by the time they get to post time later this morning. And that's great news because they got some weather at Belmont yesterday, and it's good to see the conditions improving. They'll be on the turf for all the big races coming up later today. That's good, too, and what a day it's going to be. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning, covering an awful lot of ground. Plenty more to come right up until 11 a.m. Eastern. Make sure you stay with me. Going to wrap up the show at 10:40 Eastern by visiting with champion trainer Brad Cox. That is the debut of our new Road to the Breeders' Cup segment that you will hear on this show every Saturday all the way through the Breeders' Cup in November. So make sure you stay tuned all the way through because that comes up at 10:40 Eastern time. Updated you on the poll question just a short time ago. Want to tell you that if you are unable to be in front of a television later today, we have you covered on radio. Our exclusive radio coverage of the Belmont Stakes comes your way at 5 o'clock Eastern in partnership with NBC Sports Audio Network. Myself, the Big A, and Tom Leach will all be with you 5 to almost 7:30 Eastern. We go off just a little bit before that to get you to NHL hockey, but going to be fun. Can't wait to bring it your way. Going to be a great race. I said that the Belmont is the signature event on the program today, and people are listening to that going, okay, Baron, it always is. It's the Belmont Stakes. Not necessarily. When you don't have a chance for a Triple Crown, the Belmont sometimes can be overshadowed by the grade ones before it, the three Breeders' Cup win in your ins, for example. I don't think that's the case this year. Considering the short fields in many of those races leading up to the Belmont, I think the Belmont, and especially because of the quality that you have in that race, I think it's a very good group. The Belmont is indeed the signature event. We'll see if Byron King agrees with me. He's with me now from the Blood Horse. Byron, good morning.
Good morning, Mike. How are you, buddy?
Good, good. What do you think? The Belmont, sometimes gets overshadowed when there's no chance for a triple crown. I don't think that's the case today. This is a really good group.
Yeah, I think it's a good field. You know, I'd say that the one thing that it lacks is it lacks a whole lot of, you know, kind of buzz and, you know, pre-race excitement. But, you know, you've got, what, five horses coming out of the Kentucky Derby, some of whom ran really well, such as Hot Rod Charlie, who was third across the wire, and Essential Quality, who was fourth and had a troubled start in a wide trip. And then, of course, nobody really had perhaps more trouble than a front runner, you know, in Rock Your World, who got off so poorly and then didn't run very well at all. So, you know, I think it's a good race. I think it's the Belmont, at least in my mind, usually when I look at the three Triple Crown races, I always think of the Derby naturally being the toughest with so many horses, and then the Belmont, in my mind, is usually the second toughest, and then followed by the Preakness.
I was talking with Anthony yesterday during our production meeting, and I think he told me, and correct me if I'm wrong, that this is the first time since 2010 that we haven't had a horse run in all three legs of the Triple Crown.
Correct. Yeah, correct. It was we almost, or at least for a little while, Keep Me in Mind was under consideration. He'd run in the first two legs and, you know, I think picked up, God, I can't quite remember. I think he was fourth in the Preakness, and I can't remember where he finished in the Derby, but, you know, he was in probably the top third, I'd say. But we do not have one, and obviously it's a tough, demanding test of three, you know, classic races in 5 weeks, and when you either are going to be a long shot or you're already a little gassed from the earlier legs, I think it's easy to just kind of sip it out.
One horse who is absolutely not here is the Kentucky Derby winner, Medina Spirit, at least Kentucky Derby winner for the time being until a ruling comes out from the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission. But as of now, he is the Derby winner. His trainer, Hall of Famer Bob Baffert, is not allowed to run horses in New York. He just received a 2-year ban from Churchill Downs to run horses at the Louisville, Kentucky track. Things are starting to snowball here after the split sample came back this week and confirmed that there was betamethasone in the horse's system on Derby Day. You wrote a piece on the Blood Horse, Byron, this past week, talking about some of the owners that will be sticking with Bob Baffert through all of this, and one of those being Saul Kooman, who owns so many big-time horses. Tell me a little bit more about where the situation stands right now.
Well, Saul is a part of a group that in recent years has been highly successful with, along with Tom Ryan of SF Bloodstock and Starlight, and they've all teamed together, and they kind of have this nickname called the Avengers because there's so many people like on the team, and they go out of, you know, the Keeneland sales, they pick out a lot of promising yearlings that could potentially become sires, and Baffert has been their go-to trainer. And he's turned a number of them into stallions by way of their accomplishments. And that's the ultimate home run for an owner, right? So as of now, you know, they plan to, both Saul and Jack Wolf of Starlight told me they plan to, you know, stick with Baffert. And their horses are already with him, their new 2-year-olds of this year. So that is their plan. I imagine it would put a lot of owners in a tricky spot, you know. I mean, clearly, you know, here's someone that's given you a great deal of success. Your horses might already be with him. You might really like Bob, all those kinds of factors. And then at the same time, you have what's going on, you know, that maybe that's something you don't want to participate in. Or you have a situation where even if you think, okay, I kind of think, you know, I believe in Bob and all those kinds of things, you know, will I be compromised in any way if I can't run in the Derby? Because the current ban with Churchill Downs, you know, Bob Baffert won't be back for, you know, he'll be out of it for 2 years. So it'll be 3 years before he could come back to it. So it would not be an easy situation if you were one of these, you know, these owners. And, I chatted also with Elliot Walden of Windstar, and he told me that they hadn't, you know, really had a long discussion and decided what they're going to do. So clearly the whole thing has been, it's been quite an active last few weeks in the news. And also I asked Darren Rogers of Churchill Downs, you know, would they still allow Baffert horses to earn points in the, you know, on their road to the Kentucky Derby series, and he said they hadn't yet come to that decision. So it'll be interesting. I think there's still more to come in the coming weeks and months.
Am I correct in saying, Byron, that it's not only Bob Baffert who will not be able to enter horses at Churchill and run horses there for the next 2 years, but also his assistant, for example, Jimmy Barnes? They couldn't run in his name either. Is that correct?
That is correct. I asked Darren Rogers of Churchill Downs that same question. I knew they had put out that with their initial ban that came out right after the, you know, the first positive, the shorter term one, and he said that is indeed the case. So I suppose there is a possibility that all these things, you know, could get contested in court. In fact, I expect they would. But whether or not, you know, it holds up or not, we shall see. Generally, the, you know, with most things involving property rights, whether it's a racetrack or anything else, you know, someone that has their own private property can choose to not allow someone on it or to participate there as long as they don't do it for some kind of bias, you know, religion, race, et cetera, et cetera. So as long as it's grounded in some kind of, you know, reasonable reason. Of course, Jerry Hollendorfer, who was banned by Santa Anita a couple years back, the Strona Group, which owns Santa Anita and other tracks, he fought it in court. He got one. Del Mar had followed suit and had banned him initially, and he won a temporary restraining order that allowed him to run at Del Mar, but some of the other court challenges that he had did not prove as successful. So we shall see. It's also very expensive, of course, as who anyone knows that has ever had an attorney to get involved in those kinds of things. So we'll see how this shakes out.
Joined by Byron King from the Blood Horse, talking about the situation surrounding Derby winner Medina Spirit and, of course, Hall of Fame trainer Bob Baffert, and the news that came out this past week. The split sample did indeed confirm the fact that there was betamethasone in Medina Spirit's system on Derby Day. A couple of weeks ago, actually I guess it was Preakness morning, Dr. Mary Scalay joined me on this very same program, and I asked her several questions, but one of those was whether or not she felt that betamethasone was a medication that could enhance performance and make Medina Spirit run faster. She said, no, I don't believe it is. That's not that type of medication. It's not a blood doping agent, as she put it. The other question I asked her was what the procedure would be if indeed the split sample confirmed the original test. And Byron, I want to play her comment for you because then we'll talk about it right after this. But here's what Dr. Scalay had to say.
Well, split sample analysis needs to be conducted, and when those results are received, then the stewards will convene a hearing and issue a ruling. But there would almost be two different events there. One would be if the split comes back positive, they would issue a ruling disqualifying the horse, redistributing the purse. And then there's the matter of accountability for the trainer. That is typically a separate hearing, and oftentimes those events, there are stays requested by attorneys while there is discovery and information acquired. So I'm not sure on the timing of that.
All right. If the split comes back positive, which we now know that it has, there would be a hearing. The horse would be disqualified by the rules of racing here in Kentucky. That hasn't happened yet. Byron, what are we waiting on there?
Well, I'm not privy to all the behind-the-scenes details, and it's one of the things that some people in this industry have been critical of, in that, you know, a lot of racing commissions turned pretty quiet. In fact, on most of these test results, for example, they were either announced by Baffert in the case of the first one, and then in the case of the follow-up, the split sample, the New York Times wrote a story, and then Baffert's attorney confirmed it, you know, whatever it was, the following day or hours later. So, you know, unfortunately, the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission they tend to be pretty quiet. They're going to issue their rulings, and they're going to, you know, do that, but they don't seem to want to Well, I put a lot of public comment out there ahead of time, and perhaps it's to protect themselves, you know, if there's a lawsuit or something. That would be my guess. But I would think that they are going to want to move fairly quickly. That would be my guess. I mean, obviously, you know, I don't think it makes anybody look good if these kinds of things get delayed too long. But at the same time, I mean, it is also typical, and not just in this case, but in many matters involving legal stuff, that, you know, lawyers often like more time to get their case together and all those kinds of things. But I have a suspicion we're going to see something in the not so, you know, distant future. I would think something will materialize soon, and then, of course, it will be likely appealed and then pursued in the courts, would be my guess.
Yeah. I think in terms of the disqualification itself, I'm a little bit surprised that hasn't come out yet, because that's pretty cut and dry, right? If it's in the system, no matter how it got there, the horse would be disqualified according to the rules of racing here in Kentucky. The fact that they are now making the argument that it was in his system based on the topical ointment that was applied to clear up a rash, that is what still needs to be determined in terms of really locking in on a true punishment, if you will, for the connections surrounding Medina Spirit and for Bob Baffert. I guess that's probably, maybe that's what caught people off guard with the 2-year ban, without that actually having gone through the due process yet.
Yeah, I think, you know, even though in most cases when there's a DQ or a positive test, usually it's the suspension to the trainer that might be perceived as the harsher penalty, right? You know, let's say it's a $50,000 race on a Thursday, right? Not that that's not tough on the owner that had the horse, right? But with the Kentucky Derby, to me, the bigger deal is the DQ, in the sense that, I mean, what is it? You know, a $1.5 million race, so not only, or $2 million, whatever it is, I'm not staring at the purse currently, but a staggering amount of money. But then not only that, to the winner, you know, it's worth millions more in added value as a stallion. So that alone is going to be a rather costly thing to the owner of Medina Spirit if he is DQ'd. You know, I think, and also to put in perspective, this drug, betamethasone, you know, there's classifications they have for them, and they're, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, one being the harshest, right? And this was a 3, I believe, off the top of my head. I'm not staring at all my notes. And relatively speaking, that produces relatively short suspensions, fines, things of that nature. And then, of course, they have mitigating circumstances that allow, you know, a trainer to potentially have it reduced. Now, they're also supposed to, you know, take into consideration whether a trainer has had other violations over a period of time. And in the case of Bob Baffert, he has had a number of positive cases. Not all of them have held up. For example, Charlatan and Gamine were disqualified from races at Oaklawn Park a year ago last May, and eventually upon appeal, those DQs were overturned. But clearly Baffert has some history of recent violations that could impact things as well.
Before I let you go, we have about a minute and a half, 2 minutes left before I have to get to the commercial break. If indeed Medina Spirit is disqualified, it would mean that Brad Cox would win his first Kentucky Derby with Mandaloon, who was the runner-up. Not the way that any trainer wants to win his first Kentucky Derby, but certainly he'll take it if that's the scenario that does indeed play out. A guy like Brad Cox, I mean, he's sitting in this position now, and one thing he mentioned was maybe this leads to more pre-race testing in front of these big race days, kind of like they did with the Preakness Stakes, right? They tested Medina Spirit before the race, not after the race, and he was clean going into it. Maybe that's something that comes out of this. You know, we start looking at pre-race testing ahead of at least the big race days for now.
I think you nailed that. I think, you know, clearly, or Brad did, you know, your all's conversation together, because I think that seems a logical thing. I mean, I think no matter how expensive that is, and it would be, and it would likely be too cost prohibitive to do with, you know, everyday racing, and it would probably, you know, back up the labs and everything else. But, you know, when you start talking about things like the Triple Crown and the Kentucky Derby, and, you know, obviously, the last thing that the industry and Churchill Downs and everybody involved in it want to go through is that kind of stuff, you know? So whether or not it's, you know, contamination or, you know, an error, or even the mildest of circumstances, nobody wants to go through it, you know? And so I could see it being very much worth their while to do it for, to have pretty extensive testing. And obviously things like the Breeders' Cup, I know they do out of competition testing leading up to it. And now I don't know if how frequent that is and how frequent you would need to do this, but let's say they followed the same procedure that, you know, Pimlico did. I think they tested Medina Spirit and the other Baffert horses, I think, three times in the 2 weeks leading up to the, or probably the last 8 or 9 days leading up to the Preakness Stakes. I could definitely see something like that unfolding in the future.
All right, well, Byron King, we could spend a lot more time talking about this. I'm sure we will in the future. Appreciate the visit this morning. All the best on Belmont Stakes Day. Go make a little money later today.
That's the plan, Mike, and you have a great Belmont Stakes Day as well.
All right, thanks for the visit. Byron King from the Blood Horse here on HRRN. When I come back, we turn our attention back to the Belmont Stakes, and we do it by visiting with owner Patrick O'Neill, talking about Hot Rod Charlie. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN.
A five-time graded stakes winning earner of almost $3 million, Airdrie Studs Collected is the all-time leading earner by City Zip. Winner of the Grade 1 Pacific Classic over Arrowgate, Collected also romped by 14 lengths in the Grade 3 Precisionist Stakes, defeating Accelerate. Collected bred full books of quality mares in his first two seasons, and his first crop yearlings will be unveiled at public auction later this summer. Collected stands at Airdrie Stud for 17,500 stands and nurses. Think about it.
Broken Vow, a top 15 lifetime active sire with over 170 black type horses, 90 black type winners, and approaching $80 million in progeny earnings. In 2020, Broken Vow produced Saratoga Springs winner Stan the Man and the Speedy M Primus, winner of the $700,000 turf sprint. Juvenile stakes horses include the Grass is Blue and Chasing Kara. Give your mare a great start with a proven sire. Broken Vow, standing at Pin Oak Stud.
This son of Danzig ranks among the world's elite sires, with Grade 1 winners on dirt and turf and star performers both at home and abroad. Warfront's success as an international super sire is unmatched. Recent stars include War of Will, a classic winner on dirt and a Grade 1 winner on turf, Halliday, and Civil Union. In the auction ring, his progeny continued to command top dollar. Warfront, standing at Claiborne Farm.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
This is Chris Landeros. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Midnight Bourbon takes a run at Hot Rod Charlie as they come to the top of the fairground stretch. Bandaloon, Proxy looking to unwind on the far outside. Then to the inside, Right and Just as they come for home. Star in My Dreams from Obeso Sand Run Classic. They come down toward this final furlong. It's Hot Rod Charlie and Midnight Bourbon needs to lift. Hot Rod Charlie finding for Joel Rosario. They come past the 16th. Hot Rod Charlie just holds Midnight Bourbon. And rattling home is Obesos. It's Hot Rod Charlie to win the TwinSpires.com Louisiana Derby. Second photo. Midnight Bourbon and Obesos close. Proxy finished fourth. Star of My Dreams. Mandaloon flattened today. Right and Just and Run Classic.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. That was John G. Dooley at the fairgrounds with the call of the Louisiana Derby. Huge win for Hot Rod Charlie. That was a race that would punch his ticket to the Run for the Roses. As we know, he ran another bang-up race in Louisville 5 weeks ago. He is back this afternoon hoping to pass the test of the champion. And I know that that would be welcome news to owner Patrick O'Neill and the team involved with Hot Rod Charlie. Patrick is with me now here on HRRN. Patrick, good morning.
Good morning, Mike. Thank you for having me. I know you've had my uncles on a couple of times, so I'm just glad you're not sick of the O'Neills yet.
No, not at all. I thought this was great when I asked Uncle Doug, two-time Derby-winning trainer Doug O'Neill, when I asked him to share your number with me, he sent me the contact. And in, I don't know if you know this, the way he has you listed in his contacts is Patrick O'Neill, birth date 1/26/93. So he's got the birth date right up there so that he doesn't forget it.
He's the salt of the earth. Love that guy like a second father. And that just shows he's so mindful. But that is pretty funny. That's very much like him.
It certainly is. Oh, by the way, let me do this before I get into the interview with you. I thought, in honor of all the success that you have had with Hot Rod Charlie in a very short period of time, that it was appropriate that we make you our industry star of the week on this Saturday morning. And this interview presented by our friend Stuart Morris, who offers a boutique full-service bloodstock operation, and he wants to thank his owners, his clients, his team. He knows his success is because of you. And with multiple stakes horses over the past several years that include Henley's Joy, Our Brain Trust, Malagasy, South Bend, and recent 2021 stakes winners Pacific Gale and Nikki the Vest, Stuart Morris is your source for success at the highest levels, and you can visit the Stuart Morris consignment at all of the upcoming major sales. So, Patrick, congratulations on being this week's Industry Star of the Week.
Oh, man, so blessed. I appreciate that. Again, it's all the credit in the world goes. We're just horse owners. We just go to the race, support our sixth brother in Hot Rod Charlie, who we infamously call Chuck. And all the credit goes to Team O'Neill, Doug's crew, and certainly the horse. You know, it's amazing how this horse just brings all these people together, and that's why this sport is so amazing. So thank you, Mike, for that. Extremely blessed. Appreciate it.
The name of the ownership group that you head up is Boat Racing. Tell me a little bit more about the partnership and how this all came together.
So our LLC is called Boat Racing. Infamously, as everyone probably knows, you know, my grandpa, who I'm named after, Patrick O'Neill, loved the ponies like we all do. And he grew up going to Detroit race course and might have gambled a little bit more than he probably should have. And, you know, he had four boys, one being my dad and one being, you know, my uncle Doug, as well as Dennis, who's obviously a bloodstock agent in the space. And, you know, my dad kind of, you know, infamously didn't exactly, you know, fall in love with the sport like Doug and Dennis did. But Doug and Dennis, just being young, you know, not really understanding the magnitude of what my grandpa was doing, were like, wow, majestic animals, amazing people, and just got into the sport from the very beginning. So for myself, you know, I saw Doug and Dennis, you know, from the very bottom, running horses, you know, at mid-tier tracks in Southern California from the very time I was born all the way to, you know, winning the Kentucky Derby in 2012 with J. Paul Redham, and I'll have another, and certainly in 2016 with Nyquist. And so it's been a family business for me. I somehow got lucky enough to go to Brown University, where I played football, had an amazing 4 years, and met some of the best friends I'll ever have in my life. And as we graduated in 2015, we all kind of went our separate ways. Our careers got really serious, rightfully so. You know, significant others started to happen. And so we longed to kind of have those 4 years back again. And so I brought the guys down to the track at Del Mar, and I believe in 2017. Obviously, there's nothing like a day at the track. They had an amazing time. I think Doug had a winner. And it was all downhill from there. The guys fell in love with the sport, and they said, you know, let's use this as a reason to spend more time together, and let's create an LLC. Let's get in on some horses. And if we never win a race, it's going to be all the fun in the world because we're going to be able to spend time together. Little did we know, you know, we're going to have such the benefit and the blessings to have Hot Rod Charlie in our lives. And running these amazing races like the Belmont Stakes and the Kentucky Derby.
Who are the other people that are involved with you?
So there's an individual, there's four other individuals, Daniel Giovacchini, Riley Higgins, Eric Armagos, and Alex Koizer, all 28-year-old guys that I graduated with at Brown University in 2015.
It doesn't sound like it was a hard sell when you brought this idea up to them.
It wasn't, and that's the beautiful thing about those guys and kind of what we're doing, right? They did it for all the right reasons. They didn't expect to be running in the Kentucky Derby. They didn't expect to be winning a lot of money. They said, we love horses. We love this sport. We want to bring a different type of youthful energy into this sport. We all are developing the same love that you have, Patrick. We love your uncles. And so win or lose, we're going to have a good time. And you see that time and time again. You know, we're not going to the races today saying we're going to win. We're running against the best horses and best trainers and best jockeys in the country. And we're just, you know, in a way, feel like we've won well before those gates even opened.
5 weeks ago, you had the opportunity to experience the ultimate dream that every owner has in the sport of thoroughbred racing. That's having a horse in the Kentucky Derby. Tell me about that experience with your classmates from Brown University.
It was a pinch me experience. You know, we kept saying, you can't make this stuff up. You know, walking the track from the barn area into the paddock, and I certainly was lucky enough to do that in 2012 and 2016, but to do it with my best friends in the world and bridge that with, you know, my family and this sport of kings and queens that, you know, I grew up in, and to have 160 of our best friends and family flock all over Churchill Downs, which is the pantheon of, you know, horse racing, it was absolutely surreal. You know, I'm getting chills thinking about it. I said this before, like, we won that race well before those gates ever opened, and the fact that Charlie, you know, ran his heart out, and, you know, he gave it his all, and we had a chance at the top of the stretch. You know, that's all you can ask for. He came home safe, and, you know, we lived to fight another day. So it was, you know, I'm not married. I don't have kids yet, so it certainly, for me, was probably the best moment in my life.
Yeah, he had a chance throughout much of the stretch. He battled gamely all the way to the finish of that Kentucky Derby. Complete this sentence for me, Patrick. If Hot Rod Charlie would cross the finish line first in the Belmont Stakes, it would be?
Surreal. It would be a dream come true. It would be one of those things where your head hits the pillow every night. You think, you know, this is what I would like, this is my desires, but you never think that those things actually happen. And to just, all I can think about is, you know, Hot Rod Charlie being safe after the race, you know, so proud. He's such a personality. Hugging Doug, hugging Dennis, hugging, you know, my cousins, their children, hugging my mom and dad, and hugging my best friends in the world and all of their networks, it would be absolutely surreal.
He has been walking around with a blanket the past couple of weeks or so that has had the South Carolina Gamecock logo on it, the University of South Carolina. Tell me about that story.
Yeah, I give all the credit in the world to, you know, Doug O'Neill. He, my uncle, obviously. He, you know, he's in the sport for all the right reasons. You know, he understands that these types of moments and these types of horses are fleeting. And, you know, he befriended Mr. Stephen Panis, who runs America's Best Racing, a couple years ago when he had a string of horses at Belmont. And unfortunately, he had his son passed away in a horrible car accident, in 2020. And I can't even imagine, you know. I love my parents to death. I don't have kids. But to lose your son, lose your daughter, that's got to be the worst feeling in the absolute world. And everything we've heard about Stephen's kid, Jake Panis, he was the light of the earth. He had energy. He had spirit. He had a type of leadership that you don't have when you're, you know, 15 years of age. And so, you know, Stephen and Doug were talking, and the other day, right before the Louisiana Derby, and just talking about how can we bring awareness to Stephen's, you know, scholarship organization, which is called the Jake Panis Walk-On Endowment Scholarship. Jake really, really wanted to play football at the University of South Carolina like his father. And, you know, Doug gave him a call and said, hey, I think I have an idea. We have this amazing horse that might have some potential, right? He hadn't won really anything at that point, but if something crazy happens, we win the Louisiana Derby, we'd love to commemorate and do everything we can with kind of this unexpected, notoriety with Hot Rod Charlie, and it's all been downhill from there. So Hot Rod Charlie's running for the Jake Panis Walk-On Endowed Football Scholarship and just honoring who that individual was, the spirit he brought. And, you know, he's certainly on Hot Rod Charlie's back. And, you know, we've had this undeserved, almost unexpected experience. So to give back in any way to something that's bigger than Hot Rod Charlie, bigger than Boat Racing LLC, bigger than Team O'Neill, bigger than horse racing altogether is just something that means a lot to us. So we're thinking about Jake every day, and he's certainly there with us in spirit.
That's a wonderful story, and really would love to see Hot Rod Charlie get it done for Jake Panis, for the family of Jake Panis, and, of course, for the team surrounding him, including Patrick O'Neill, who is with me now here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Patrick, he also got a visit earlier this week from Hall of Fame jockey Chris McCarron, who hopped aboard his pony Lava Man, the Hall of Famer. You had two Hall of Famers stop by to visit Hot Rod Charlie. That was cool, too.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. I was just talking to Chris, and I looked up to him. I always think about the ride he gave Tisnow in the Breeders' Cup Classic here at Belmont Park, and then certainly winning against Giants Causeway at Churchill Downs. And so just to be breathing the same air as Chris and to be talking about Hot Rod Charlie, who he says obviously has a big chance, it was a surreal moment. And to connect him with Lava Man, who he's talking about, wow, this horse is similar in size to Tisnow, who we all know is an absolute Goliath of a horse. It was just very, very surreal. And Chris is the light of the earth, and certainly it can't hurt to have more successful people around Hot Rod Charlie, like Chris McCarron, and certainly like Hall of Famer Lava Man. So we got good company. We're in good company, Mike.
Yeah, and Lava Man will accompany Hot Rod Charlie to the post again today, right?
He will be. He will be. It's funny. Every time that guy goes to the track, I feel like he thinks he's running. So it's a net good thing. He's coaching up Hot Rod Charlie. But it's super funny. Every time you put a tack on Lava Man, I think it feels like he's running in that 2005 Gold Cup again.
Well, Patrick, it's an amazing story. I hope the ride continues later this afternoon. All the best with Hot Rod Charlie in the Belmont Stakes.
Thank you, Mike, for having me. Really, really appreciate it. Have a great day.
Appreciate the visit, my friend. Patrick O'Neill here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, this week's Industry Star of the Week, and you can see why. When you hear him talk about the friendship, the partnership, what this means beyond the sport of thoroughbred racing, the Jake Panis Fund, just incredible, incredible stuff. And my thanks to Patrick for telling the story with me here this morning. When I come back, you'll hear from newly minted Hall of Famer Todd Pletcher walking through his three contenders in today's Test of the Champion. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Hey, horse players, it's Paul Allen, radio voice of the Purple and track announcer at Canterbury Park. In 2020, Canterbury introduced a 10% takeout pick five, the best value in racing. This year, in addition to the nation's lowest takeout pick five, Canterbury is introducing an all-new $1 10% takeout pick six. No jackpots, no gimmicks. Watch and wager on Canterbury Park all summer. Racing runs Tuesday through Thursday at 5 p.m. Central and Sundays at 1. CanterburyPark.com. Come play.
This week's Flair Fact is brought to you by Achieve Equine, maker of Flair Equine Nasal Strips. The spleen is a reserve tank for red blood cells, which contracts during exercise to release them, allowing increased oxygen carrying capacity. It has been proven that the faster a horse runs, the higher this packed cell volume of the blood gets, until the blood is 65% red blood cells. For more Flair facts, visit flairstrips.com/learn.
Hey everyone, it's The Baron with this week's North of the Border Report presented by Woodbine Entertainment. The return of live racing at Woodbine is right around the corner on June 18th. And in this week's report, I'll tell you why lucky currency is money for trainer Don McRae and take a look at ones to watch when the meet resumes in just 13 days. August 26, 1998 was a special day for trainer Don McRae as Lucky Currency provided him with his first Woodbine win. It was a moment McRae recalls and will never forget, saying, quote, "I remember her coming off the turn and kicking on. She won by a couple of lengths that day. When you get that first win, it doesn't matter if they're five in front or they're head bobbing. You're still screaming like a fool. It's a good feeling. It's one of those feelings you never forget. You get stars in your eyes, and you cherish those moments forever," end quote.
In other Woodbine news, Canadian Thoroughbreds Jennifer Morrison points out a couple youngsters to watch when they make their two-year-old debuts. One trainer whose juveniles have been lighting up the work tab in recent weeks is Ralph Biamonte. Keep an eye out for the gray filly Bakshish. The Ontario bred by Summer Front has a number of good workout times, including a 4-furlong prep on May 30th and 47 3/5 with another Biamonte juvenile, Ms. Gemma. The colt, Heat Merchant, may also be worth a bet when he makes his first start. From the first crop of the very fast millionaire Kobe's back, Heat Merchant worked a quick 4 furlongs on May 30th in 47 2/5. And that's your North of the Border report for this Saturday morning. For more updates and racing information, visit Woodbine.com or follow along on Twitter at WoodbineTB.
This is Greg Foley, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Rags to Riches is coming with a 4-wide sweep, and Tiago is in behind them. And at the top of the stretch, a filly is in front of the Belmont, but Carlin is right there with her. These two in a battle of the sexes in the Belmont Stakes. It is Carlin on the inside, Rags to Riches on the outside. A desperate finish. Rags to Riches and Carlin, they're coming down to the wire. It's going to be very close, and it's going to be a filly in the Belmont. Rags to Riches has beaten Carlin and 100 years of Belmont history. The first filly to win it in over a century.
What a race that was. 2007, Rags to Riches defeating Curlin. Tom Durkin had the call. It was a race that got everything started for us here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Our first ever national radio broadcast of a horse race. It was a special day for us and a special day for trainer Todd Pletcher. It was his first win in a classic race, and he pulls it off with a filly in Rags to Riches who knocks off Curlin. And, you know, Curlin's been pretty good to Todd now. You know, Curlin, you look at Known Agenda, right? The Florida Derby winner, a son of Curlin. So Todd beats Curlin, and then he has a horse that wins the Florida Derby by Curlin. How about Overtook? Another horse in today's Belmont, trained by Todd Pletcher, who is a son of Curlin. Curlin has been sensational. So has the Hall of Famer Todd Pletcher. And earlier this week, he took time to talk with our Anthony Stabile about each of his contenders.
Talk to us about how special that was for you to see one of your guys take the Preakness.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really proud of the guys out there that have worked with us and you know, supported us, and certainly were a big part of, you know, getting to the Hall of Fame, and couldn't do it without some great support. But you know what I told Michael and those guys, I'm not only proud that they're doing well, but I'm really proud of the way that they're representing themselves, representing their stable, and representing the industry. And you know, that's what I'm really the most pleased with, is they're not only doing good jobs on the racetrack, but they're representing the game the right way.
Yeah, they sure are. The Belmont Stakes, a race you have had a tremendous amount of success in, of course, 2007 with Rags to Riches, 2013 with Palace Malice, most recently in 2017 with Taprit. 6 seconds as well. If this was Wheel of Fortune, you could buy a vowel. If you could buy 3 lengths, you'd have about 7 wins in this race already.
I know. Some of our worst beats have been in this race with Destin when he got nailed on the wire, and Commissioner led almost every step of the way and got nailed late. And, you know, even Stay Thirsty was a pretty close second, and Dunkirk led a good portion of the way. So it, you know, last year with Dr. Post, he ran great in kind of a different type of Belmont, obviously at 1 1/8, but he was just second best to Tis the Law. But yeah, we've, you know, we're proud that we've had a lot of horses run well in it, but like you said, a length or two the other way, and we could have a couple more. But I also think back, Rags to Riches was on a close photo, so, you know, we were fortunate for that one to go our way. So that's the way it works in this game.
Talk about the Belmont itself and how you prepare these horses for this grueling mile and a half.
Well, I think the big thing is trying to identify the ones that want to stay that mile and a half trip. And, you know, we've had quite a bit of success in a lot of longer marathon-type races, even on the turf. You know, we've won a couple of the two-mile races and been pretty fortunate in the mile-and-a-half dirt races and the mile-and-three-quarter race, the Birdstone at Saratoga. So I think something about our training program, whether it's just, you know, consistent foundation of breezes through their career that has them that little extra fit that you'd want to be in a mile-and-a-half race. But, you know, also it's pretty well published that we've skipped a lot of Preaknesses and focused on the Belmont. And I think, you know, coming in with 5 weeks rest and having pretty much a good 4.5 weeks of preparation at Belmont certainly helps.
So Known Agenda is going to be the shortest of your three runners. Got that dreaded one hole in the Kentucky Derby 5 weeks ago. Talk us through Known Agenda's trip and how he's been training since the Run for the Roses.
He's been training great. I'm really, really happy with the way he's coming to the race. I mean, he certainly gives me the impression that he's sitting on a good one. The Derby race, I think, is overlooked a little bit. I think he ran better than it looks on paper. There's a kind of a critical moment coming to the eighth pole the first time by the stands that he was really, really close to establishing a position that would have put him about eighth or ninth, and he wasn't quite able to get to that spot. And when that hole closed, he got shuffled back to 18th or 19th and just was in a really difficult spot to come from way back. And you know, at the quarter pole, he had a lot to do. He kept closing. He finished up, I thought, as well as anyone, but he just had way too much to do on a track that unfortunately, you know, horses just weren't coming back a whole lot. So, to me, it was a better-than-looked race, and I really like the way he's training, so I'm hoping he's going to step forward and certainly benefit if there's an honest pace in front of him.
Bourbonic seems to be training right along as well, and again, you know, the distance seems to be something he's going to appreciate.
Definitely. I think you know, he'll still have his legs underneath him finishing up at the end of the race. And, you know, sometimes that's what it takes. But, again, I mean, I think the real key to any success for our three horses is we need an honest pace. We need Central Quality and Hot Rod Charlie and Rock Your World to go out there and make sure that it's a good pace. And then if that happens, I think that certainly helps our chances.
Overtook's an interesting one. Started his career with the Blinkers. This horse was making up some ground in a paceless Peter Pan. The Blinkers go back on. Manny Franco's ridden him before. He was a good second in the Withers. He's another one, another son of Curlin. This one out of an AP Indy mare as well. I mean, I would imagine distance is going to be something he's going to appreciate as well.
That's what we're thinking, you know. And again, the AP Indy on the bottom side angle. And, you know, he's a grinder. So, again, we need some pace, but putting the Blinkers back on hopefully just has him a little more locked in. And, you know, I thought his Peter Pan was a respectable race considering there wasn't a lot of pace on and he kept coming.
Todd, thanks for some time. Best of luck to you and congratulations again on the Hall of Fame.
Thanks very much.
Hall of Famer Todd Pletcher looking to add to his resume later today in the test of the champion. And trust me when I tell you, he has one heck of a shot with his three horses, in particular Known Agenda. He's the most highly regarded of the three. He's the horse that broke from the one hole in the Kentucky Derby, which is, many people would say, an impossible task. And you heard Todd talk about the fact that it was a better-than-it-looked race because Known Agenda had an opportunity to put himself into a good position. He just missed getting into that race. And how many times have we talked about that during Kentucky Derby week, that a jockey will tell you, and I can remember Jerry Bally telling me this at one point years ago when we had him on one of our morning shows during Derby week, that you need a horse that can have multiple accelerations and be able to settle after he accelerates. You have to be able to get into a hole when it opens up and then settle again, wait for another opening, and go. And it sounds to me, in listening to Todd talk during that interview, that Known Agenda had that opportunity. Coming past the line the first time, going into the first turn, just missed getting there by a minuscule amount. And that could have been the difference between winning and losing. Now, who knows if he would have gone on to win, even if he had gotten into that position. But at least he would have given himself a fighting chance. Which when you, and that's the problem with the rail in the Kentucky Derby. You run into a lot of traffic going into that first turn. And if you don't get yourself into position, well, now you got a lot of traffic to weave through. And Todd thinking, after watching the race, that effort was better than it looked. And if Todd Pletcher says it, I have to believe it. We'll see if Todd can win a fourth Belmont Stakes later today. Again, our coverage here on the network beginning 5 o'clock Eastern. Make sure you join us nationwide, Sirius 219, XM 201, the very same channel you're listening to right now, on the NBC Sports Audio Sirius XM channel, on affiliates across the country, and streaming worldwide at horseracingradio.net. You can go to our website, horseracingradio.net, to check out a complete listing of affiliates coast to coast and, of course, listen worldwide. Last week, I debuted kind of a fun new segment on this program where I look ahead or look back on memorable dates in racing history. I thought I'd do it again here this morning since it is Belmont Stakes Day. So let's take you through some of these dates right now. How about this one? This was actually yesterday, and I thought it was really cool, so I wanted to keep it in here. June 4th, 1941, 3 days before his race in the Belmont Stakes. 3 days, which would have completed, would eventually complete the Triple Crown. For Whirlaway, he worked a mile and a quarter in 2:02 and two fifths. 3 days before the Belmont, he worked a mile and a quarter in 2:02 and two fifths. Old school, baby. Old guys rule, as the Pontiff of the Pick Four always used to say. June 5th, 1884. Today, in 1884, James McLaughlin became the first jockey to ride three consecutive Belmont Stakes winners when he rode Panique to victory. He previously won with George Kinney in 1883 and Forrester in 1882. He repeated that feat in 1886 through 1888, and his triple was matched years later by Lafitte Pinkeye Jr. in 1984 when he capped off his hat trick aboard Swale. June 5th, 1937, War Admiral became the fourth winner of the Triple Crown with his win in the Belmont Stakes. It was on this day in 1943 that Count Fleet ended his racing career by winning the Belmont by 25 lengths. He was the sixth American Triple Crown winner, and Count Fleet was such a heavy favorite for the race, going off at odds of 1 to 20, that no place or show wagering was allowed that day. Pretty cool. June 5th, 1993, jockey Julie Crone became the first female rider to win a Triple Crown race when she won the Belmont aboard Colonial Affair. I still remember exactly where I was the day that Colonial Affair splashed to victory in the Belmont. June 5th, 1999, on this day in 1999, Charismatic lost his bid to become the 12th Triple Crown winner when he fractured his left front cannon bone and sesamoid while finishing third to Lemon Drop Kid in the Belmont Stakes. Charismatic, of course, died February 19th, 2017 at Old Friends here in Kentucky. Those are some memorable dates in thoroughbred racing history on this June 5th Belmont Stakes Day 2021. When I come back, I'll get you ready for a busy third hour of the program. That's next on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Proud to once again be your home for the Triple Crown.
They're off in the Kentucky Derby. They're off in the Preakness. They're off in the Belmont Stakes.
You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the Triple Crown.
The National HBPA is continuously working to protect the health and welfare of horses by advocating and funding research to help reduce equine injuries, lobbying for a national testing lab to oversee and establish absolute uniform laboratory protocols, advocating for every track to undergo an annual independent surface assessment, passionately supporting off-the-track thoroughbred retirement facilities and adoption groups, and so much more. See additional HBPA initiatives at nationalhbpa.com.
Fans, join us early on Saturday as the third and final jewel in racing's Triple Crown, the Belmont Stakes, will be simulcast from New York along with a tremendous undercard. Admission gates will open at 8 a.m. with a clubhouse opening at 9 a.m. Infield admission gates will open at 10 a.m. That's all on Belmont Stakes Day this Saturday. First live race post time on Saturday and Sunday will be at 1 o'clock. And please note, there will be a mandatory payout in Sunday's 20-cent Rainbow Pick 6 jackpot. Although Santa Anita is now open to the public, please visit at SantaAnita.com/open for reserve seating, as walk-up admission is not yet available. And fans, Santa Anita's grandstand paddock room has been reopened. Please visit our website for details. If you can't join us in person, all of Santa Anita's races are still available free of charge at SantaAnita.com/live, and you can watch and wager via First Bet. That's First.com/bet.
I want to get back to being in my community group.
I want to continue having a soccer season.
So I can throw parties again. So I can go to her parties.
It'd really be nice to dine in instead of getting delivery for a change.
So I can feel safe and protected for myself and my students.
We each have our own reason for why we're getting vaccinated against COVID-19. What will yours be? Visit GetVaccineAnswers.org for information on the COVID-19 vaccines. It's up to you. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Here's today's STEM tip. Don't throw out that old plastic bottle. Repurpose it by turning it into an awesome terrarium. Just fill it with sand, pebbles, soil, and your favorite plant. It'll grow sealed right in its own ecosystem. Learn more at SheCanSTEM. A message from the Ad Council.
Hi, this is the Big A, Anthony Stabile, reminding you that Race Day, presented by Twin Spires, comes to you every Wednesday through Friday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern here on HRRN. Bobby Newman joins me for racing from tracks like Churchill Downs, Belmont Park, and Santa Anita. We'll also bring you interviews with all of the players, both big and small, in Thoroughbred Racing. You can tune in to Race Day, presented by Twin Spires, on Sirius 219, XM 201, or stream it live on your home for all of racing's biggest events at horseracingradio.net.
This is jockey Julian Lepau, and you're listening to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Mike Penna with you on this Saturday morning, edging ever closer to the start of our coverage of the Test of the Champion, 5 o'clock Eastern this afternoon. The race set to go shortly before 7 o'clock. We'll take you all the way through Belmont 153 here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. You know, if you love to hunt, if you love to fish, if you love the outdoors, you need to go check out Whitetail Heaven Outfitters, Elite Outdoor Superstore. They've been there now since, well, I guess last November is when they opened, and they're in Nicholasville, Kentucky, just a few miles south of the Fayette Mall on Nicholasville Road. Owned by former horse trainer Tevis McCauley, the Elite Outdoor Superstore really does have everything you need to hunt deer, turkey, ducks, fishing, so much more, whatever it might be. They have a couple of indoor archery ranges. If you want to try out some of the new bows before you buy them, you can do it there. If you want to take your bow in and shoot a little bit, I think you can rent those ranges too. It's a fantastic place, a really cool setup. And again, you can talk some horses with Tevis if he's there, because he trained horses for a very long time. Maybe get his thoughts on today's Belmont Stakes. Stop in and see them. It's the Whitetail Heaven Outfitters Elite Outdoor Superstore in Nicholasville, Kentucky. And one other event to tell you about. Don't forget that the Claiming Crown will be here before we know it. Yeah, we're sitting here in early June, but we're already thinking about the Claiming Crown. Don't miss this year's edition of the Claiming Crown. It's going to be at Gulfstream Park with full fields, big purses, and great betting opportunities. And you can take your horse from claim to fame. I always call it the Breeders' Cup for the blue-collar horses. Go to ClaimingCrown.com to learn more about how you can nominate your horse to this year's Claiming Crown. Of course, that's an event that is presented by a partnership of the National HBPA, TOBA, Florida HBPA, and Gulfstream Park. Again, ClaimingCrown.com is where you can go to learn more there. Busy third hour of the show. I'll tell you about that in a minute, but let me get you an update on the poll question here this morning. I asked you to let me know who you feel is going to win the 153rd Belmont Stakes this afternoon. Rombauer, Essential Quality, Hot Rod Charlie. Those are the three expected favorites. And then you can choose other and let me know who else you think might win outside of the top three if you don't think any of those are going to win the Belmont today. Looks like Essential Quality, the juvenile champion, a horse that many people thought was best in the Kentucky Derby 5 weeks ago, is going to be the winner of this poll. So far, 51% of the vote coming in for Essential Quality, 24% for Hot Rod Charlie, 20% in the other category, and I told you Known Agenda getting some respect in there, as is Rock Your World. Rombauer, the Preakness winner, only getting 5% of the vote. A little surprising to me. I thought Rombauer might be a little. His race, I get it. This is a tougher field. This is a race where he's coming back on 3 weeks after winning the Preakness. I thought Rombauer ran a monster race. Now, if he runs that race again, is it good enough to win the Belmont? That's the question. He can run back to that same effort, and he can still get beat because this is a tougher field. But Rombauer not getting much respect in here, only 5% of the vote coming in for the Preakness winner. All right, well, 2 hours down, one to go, and still plenty more to come on this morning's Equine Forum. Hour three begins with this week's edition of In the Room with Sean Clancy. And trust me, it is one that you won't want to miss. Sean sits down for a unique one-on-one jockey-to-jockey conversation with Hall of Famer and Triple Crown winner Steve Cawthon. That kicks it off, 10 o'clock Eastern, which is only about 1 minute away. Plus, Kurt Becker's stroll through racing history. And we start down the road to the Breeders' Cup with trainer Brad Cox, who joins me at 10:40 Eastern Time. If your local station is leaving us at this time, you can continue listening to the third hour of the show nationwide on Sirius 219, XM 201, in the Louisville, Kentucky market on ESPN 680, or on your computer, phone, or tablet with our live streaming at horseracingradio.net. Hour three of the Equine Forum comes up next, right after I pause. 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it is the New York hero, Tiz the Law and Manny Franco, to win the Belmont Stakes.
A desperate finish. Rags to riches and Carlin, they're coming down to the wire. It's going to be very close, and it's going to be a filly in the Belmont. Rags to Riches has beaten Carlin.
Easy Goer gets clear by four. Sunday Silence remains in second. La Voyageur, the horse from France, is third. It's New York's Easy Goer in front.
He's just perfect, and now he's just immortal. Justify is the 13th Triple Crown winner.
Welcome to the Equine Forum.
Kent DeSormo imploring rail quiet to hold on. Victory Gallop, a final surge. It's going to be very close. Here's the wire. It's too close to call. Was it rail quiet or was it Victory Gallop? A picture is worth 1,000 words. This photo is worth $5 million.
And on the outside, Taprit. Taprit has taken the lead. Taprit and Irish Warcry come down to the line together. It is Taprit and Jose Ortiz in the Belmont Stakes.
And Pine Bluff is all out on the lead. AP Indy is right there with him. It's very tight. My Memoirs is full of run, but AP Indy surges to victory in the Belmont Stakes.
American Foe is finally the one. American Foe has won the Triple Crown.
Now, here's Mike Pena.
Welcome back. Hour three of the Equine Forum on this Belmont morning. Happy Belmont Stakes Day, HRN Nation. Welcome to the show that launched a network. This indeed is the Equine Forum, and right here on your official radio home of the 153rd Belmont Stakes, the Horse Racing Radio Network. Happy to have you back with me as we continue on right up until 11 a.m. Eastern. If you missed any portion of the first 2 hours of the program, or any of our shows for that matter, my interview this morning with the Big A, Beast of the Belmont, Anthony Stabile, kicked off the show at 8:15. Kieran McLaughlin joined me to talk about jockey Luis Saez and his mounts on this Saturday program at Belmont Park. And he also talked about some of his Belmont Day memories, and there have been plenty for Kieran. That was at 8:35 Eastern time. Was also joined by Byron King from the Blood Horse to talk about the situation surrounding Medina Spirit and Bob Baffert in the Kentucky Derby. That was a very insightful conversation. Patrick O'Neill, the owner of Hot Rod Charlie and the nephew of trainer Doug O'Neill, was with me in the second hour of the program as well. And then you heard from trainer Todd Pletcher just a short time ago walking through his horses in the Belmont Stakes. If you missed any of that, all you have to do is go over to our website, horseracingradio.net, a podcast available for you to listen to at your leisure, horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on Apple Podcasts. Again, the poll question, who do you feel is going to win the 153rd Belmont Stakes? Let me know at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, or you can email the show, mike@horseracingradio.net. Well, I told you this third hour was going to begin with a fantastic conversation that my good friend Sean Clancy had. Every week we kick off the third hour with In the Room, which is the new segment we launched several weeks ago. Sean sits down for a one-on-one jockey-to-jockey conversation, and it's very unique because they get into a whole bunch of different things that you wouldn't think about. But because Sean has played the game, he has a way of drawing things out of these riders. And today he sat down with Hall of Fame jockey Steve Cawthon. This interview and this segment brought to you by ThisIsHorseRacing.com. Here's Sean Clancy in the room with Steve Cawthon.
Confirmed that Steve Cawthon is going to win this 24th running of the Kentucky Derby.
They come on down to the finish. Affirmed in Ali Dar. Here's the finish. Affirmed.
Affirmed in Ali Dar. Heads apart. Affirmed's got a nose in front as they come onto the wire.
This is In the Room with Sean Clancy.
I'm Sean Clancy, and I'm in the room with jockey Steve Cawthon. Three Eclipse Awards in one season, the Triple Crown, three-time British champion jockey, Sports Illustrated Sportsman of the Year, the Hall of Fame. It is my pleasure and honor to be in the room with the kid, Steve Cawthon. Welcome to the show, Steve.
Thanks, Sean. Good to be with you.
It's Belmont Stakes Day and Epsom Derby Day. Let's start there. Take us back to Affirmed and the Triple Crown on the line in 1978. What was the pressure like for you, an 18-year-old kid, with that kind of moment in your hands?
Yeah, that's probably the most pressure I've ever felt, you know, going into a race, you know, because I really kind of felt the, you know, I really, the Derby didn't, you know, disturb me too much, and the Preakness either, but then obviously, you know, when you got the chance to win the Triple Crown and kind of be a part of, you know, you're already a part of history, but, you know, to be a significant part of, you know, I think at that point only 10 had done it before, so, you know, it was an opportunity, and I didn't want to mess it up. So yeah, I was feeling a little, you know, a little bit of pressure. But you know, I knew I could count on the horse, and so you know, it was exciting at the same time.
Yeah, how did you deal with that pressure? Is there people you talk to, or you have a way of dealing with it, or you're that young and don't really process it? I mean, what was that like?
Nah, you know, I think I process it. You know, just. You know, I didn't really, you know, I obviously wasn't going to go talk to any of my competitors to, you know, let them know I was feeling a little bit anxious about it. But, you know, obviously, you know, I talked to, you know, my parents, you know, I didn't talk to them and say, oh, I'm feeling, you know, I'm feeling nervous or whatever. But, you know, just talking to them made me, you know, settled me down some, and just, you know, talking to people that, you know, are going to love you whether it, you know, you win or lose or whatever happens. So, you know, just kind of knowing what's real and what's, you know, obviously, you know, the most important things.
Sure. And what were your thoughts going into the Belmont? I mean, it's a longer race. Was that better or worse for Affirmed?
Obviously, it's an unknown for any horse. But, you know, obviously, you know, I felt like it was probably not better. I didn't know it would be worse either, but it was a big question mark, and, you know, he'd had, obviously, you know, they'd gone through a couple of tough races, you know, obviously Ali Dar was kind of the bigger, more, you know, stronger looking horse, so, of course, those guys, you know, their team was saying, oh, yeah, this time we're just going to run him into the ground, and I knew that's probably what they were going to try to do, but I knew Affirmed had a lot of heart, and that you know, he was just an extremely talented horse as well. So, you know, there was, as you say, there was never that much between them in any of the races that they ran, and it was a little bit just kind of getting the right tactics. And you know, I knew Affirmed would always try to gut it out, you know, if he was good enough. So, I was optimistic without being over. Confident, because I never was overconfident whenever I rode against Ali Dar, because he was a hell of a horse.
Right, for sure. Yeah, and take us through the race. Did it go as planned? I mean, were there moments where you thought, oh boy, I'm in trouble here? What was that like?
Well, it did kind of go to, you know, the big thing was to try to slow the pace down, you know, obviously we wanted it to be more like a mile and a quarter race than a mile and a half race, you know, so we got away with the first half of a mile and 50, which, you know, was good. And but then, yeah, that was the end of the, you know, Allardyce said, you know, enough of that. But, you know, the thing was, when Allardyce came to me, I just thought, you know, I know he doesn't want to go on. He doesn't want to go to the lead a mile out. I'm just going to sit here. You know, if he goes on, I'll just follow him and, you know, ride it from there. But, you know, in my heart, I knew he didn't want to go on. So, you know, once George got up to me, we just kind of sat and looked at each other for a while. And, you know, but then at some point, probably about, you know, five out, you know, obviously George, you know, the pace picked up. And, you know, the race really began. And, it, you know, obviously from that point on, it was, you know, very contentious. And at the head of the stretch, yeah, I was a little concerned because, you know, I could feel affirmed underneath me, just feeling a little bit, you know, tired, you know, just kind of felt like he was, you know, not really, I wasn't feeling confident about it at that point, I'll put it that way. But, you know, obviously I just, you know, kept riding him, and then I hit him left-handed, and, you know, he responded, and, you know, once he got his head back in front, you know, it kind of felt like he was going to keep it in front no matter if we went another mile.
What a feeling, huh?
Yeah, tremendous feeling. It's a lot of emotions, you know. I think one of the emotions was exhilaration and also like an exhale of, you know, thank God that's over. And also, you know, just pride in, you know, the horse and in myself, you know. Basically, I realized that, you know, I couldn't make one mistake, you know, during the whole race and wow. still win it, you know, and that's really what happened, you know. And so, you know, it's kind of gratifying, more gratifying to win it that way, although it's very, you know, you know, get your nerves going. But,
yeah.
But it was, you know, it was a great race. It was, you know, in my mind, it was the greatest race I was ever involved in, and I rode in a lot of tight finishes and won a lot of big races in tight finishes, but that was just, you know, the epitome of what racing's all about.
And then 7 years later, you know, you've moved your tack to England and you ride slip anchor in the Epsom Derby. Your seventh
yeah.
try in the race, the favorite for well, he wasn't Sir Henry Cecil then, but later became Sir Henry
right.
Cecil. But
mm-hmm.
Similar feeling, pressure. I mean, similar as affirmed or what?
I mean, you know, like obviously, it's more, you know, once you get to that stage of your life and everything, it's more that your desire to do something, you know, than the pressure of. I'm worried about not doing it, you know. It's just that, like, I really just want to achieve this goal, you know. And obviously, you know, I had a lot of confidence in the horse. I called my dad and, you know, said I think I can win the Derby this year, the Derby. you know, come over. And so he was there, so that was cool.
Wow.
And, you know, Lord Howard DeWalden, who owned the horse, who also, you know, was one of the wealthiest guys in England and owned about half of London. He'd never won the Derby before, so, you know, it was like, you know, a dream of his, you know, one of the things on his bucket list. And, so it was nice to do it for him. It was Henry's first Derby, win. And, yeah, so there was a lot of firsts and a lot of, you know, things that were, you know, exciting for everybody that was involved. And it was nice to be correct about, you know, the horse, you know, knowing that and he just had really improved, you know, in the last couple months leading up to the Derby, and so, you know, I was feeling good about it. But obviously, in any race, you know, things can go wrong. But it pretty much went exactly like I hoped it would, and he, you know, dictated the race and just won, you know, won like a good horse should.
Yeah, the announcer turning for home. I mean, you rounded Tattenham Corner, and the announcer says, surely Steve has stolen it. What did you think when you look back and you're, what, 10 clear in a race?
I think I was more like 15 clear.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
But, you know, yeah, I mean, I you know, I hadn't really looked behind. You know, I was just pacing my horse. So, yeah, I mean, I thought I can't, yeah, as long as I don't fall over, you know, he's going to win. Because he was still trailing good at that point, you know. At the head of the lane in England, it was still four furlongs to go, you know. So, but yeah, I was pretty comfortable because I knew the one thing he really did, you know, was stay a mile and a half very well. So, you know, I thought there's no way they can catch me. So I was just, you know, like you said, trying to keep him balanced and together because it's a you know, basically all the way down the straight, you're running on the side of a hill pretty much.
Sure. And when you say pacing my horse, I guess that's what it's about in that race on a front runner, especially.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's, you know, knowing that your horse is doing it well within himself, and you know, obviously I'd ridden the horse, you know, 3 or 4 times before that, so I knew the horse. I'd been I rode him out the last 3 weeks of it before the Derby. I got on him every morning. I didn't want anybody else to screw it up, you know. I didn't want anybody to, you know, anything to happen, and he was feeling so good. And one day he reared up and stood on his hind legs, you know, just straight up with me. And I thought, you know, so, you know, that's how, you know, good he was feeling in himself and getting a lot of confidence and just feeling like a man. So it was an exciting thing to be involved in. That was my first. And then a couple of years later, I got another one on Reference Point. It was a horse that totally hated the course, but, you know, was good enough to overcome it.
Yeah, he was in front, but nothing like the Tour de Force of Slip Anchor.
Right. I mean, I think it was just it was not so much that he couldn't. It was the undulations kind of. I was having to hold him together all the way down the stretch. You know, it was like a big, you know, baby Dewey. You know, that's you know, just felt awkward. You know, on that track where other. A nice galloping track with, you know, where you're meeting the ground. Shoot, he was a powerful horse, but on that track he felt like a car with, you know, 2.5 wheels. You know?
Wow.
So yeah, it was challenging in that respect, but you know, he was obviously good enough to, you know, get it done.
Yeah, he did that on talent, I guess.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
When you look back at what you accomplished, I mean, the history of your riding career, what's that like? I mean, is it disbelief or awe or like another person? I mean, with years now in between, I mean, do you look back at it and think, how did that happen or who was that person?
I do, you know, it's like I have all those feelings. Some days I look back and think, you know, how did that happen? How did I do that? You know, why didn't I do more? Should I, you know, a lot of things, but. But, you know, obviously I'm very grateful for, you know, my career. I, you know, with age and stuff, you know, you start to realize all the wonderful people that you were involved with and you met and you're still, you know, you still know, you still, you know, follow. I mean, unfortunately, a few of them are falling by the wayside, you know, and it's sad to see them go. But, you know, I've been blessed, though. You know, I rode for some of the greatest trainers, and I think I also rode in a, you know, in a generation of, you know, terrific jockeys, you know, here in America and in Europe, you know, so it was a lot of fun. It was obviously, you know, hard work. You know, the hardest thing for me was dealing with my weight. You know, other than that, I would be riding today. You know?
Sure. Yeah,
because I enjoyed it and I loved the challenge and I loved, you know, the connection with the horses.
Yeah, no doubt. When you retired in 1992, how did you know it was time?
It was just
an easy decision, or?
Well, it was in the sense of I was just, you know, killing myself trying to keep my weight down. You know, I'd get halfway through the season and think, you know, I don't think I can make it the rest of the way, you know.
Wow.
Somehow I would manage, but, you know, it was just mentally and physically tough. And it also, on the other hand, is, you know that you're never going to be as good at anything else the rest of your life as you were at what you're quitting. So that makes it tough, you know.
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt.
But at the same time, you know, I think it was the right decision, and I've never regretted it other than, you know, like you said, just the part of you that, you know, feels more comfortable in the, you know, on the back of a horse than anywhere else, really.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's, I have similar feelings when I stopped. But when you look back at your success, how much of it is, do you chalk up to luck, and how much of it hard work and talent?
99% hard work and 1% luck.
Wow, really?
Yeah. No, I don't. You know, I mean, you make your own luck. You know, I mean, Obviously, you got to be, you know, lucky enough to be in the right place at the right time when somebody needs a good jockey. And, you know, like I was with Affirmed, right? I mean,
right.
Basically, you know, Cordero and Pinkai both had, you know, were asked to ride that horse in the Sanford Stakes before me because they'd ridden him and won on him. But, you know,
right.
They either didn't think he was good enough. Well, both of them obviously didn't think he was that good, or they would have made the effort to come, you know. And Cordero picked another horse. So, you know, it's good luck, and it's, you know, good luck that on their bad, you know, judgment and whatever, you know, what you want to call it. On that day, I got lucky. But, you know, if I hadn't got lucky with him, you know, I would have probably got lucky with something else. I was also, my bad luck was I was also asked to ride Spectacular Bid, and my agent chose to go somewhere else and ride something else.
Wow.
So, you know, you get good luck and you get bad luck.
And I got one more. I got to tell you, I have this album here that I've had for a long time. It's called And Steve Coffin Sings Too. I mean, what in the world? You got to.
I know. My friend said, yeah, not really. Not really. But hey, you know, all I can say is I look back on it with fondness because it was fun doing it. And, you know, I knew I couldn't sing anyway. The joke, actually, the funniest thing that ever happened to me with that was just gotten to England, and my Jimmy Lindley, the guy that was kind of helping me learn the tracks and stuff, organized me for me to go ride in Austria on a weekend.
Wow.
And I somehow Jimmy had got the daggone record and never told me about it. So I was in the jock's room, and then that track, you have to walk down the track to get to the paddock. And I'm walking down the track, and they got, you know, loudspeakers, like, you know, and all of a sudden this music starts coming out over the loudspeaker, and I'm kind of humming, oh, that sounds kind of familiar, and you know, it's a nice tune. And then all of a sudden my voice comes out over the loudspeaker. I almost crawled in the hole. It was like, oh, shoot. But anyway, I've got a lot of laughs out of it. It's been fun.
No question. I remember my brother and I getting that as a kid. We just, you know, we were in awe of it. We were in awe of your career.
Sounded good back then, right?
Yeah, for sure. We were like, man, we were just like that. And he can sing. I can't believe it.
Oh, my gosh. He can do everything.
That's brilliant. That's Steve Coffin, the kid. All the best, Steve. Thanks for being on the show. It's a real pleasure to talk about old memories like that.
Absolutely. Thanks, Sean. Good talking to you, buddy.
What a conversation. If you're a fan of horse racing and that didn't perk you up, boy, there's something wrong, because that was tremendous. My thanks to Sean and to the kid, Steve Coffin, for taking time to go in the room with Sean Clancy. That segment each week is designed to benefit and give back to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. 20% of all proceeds, all sponsorship proceeds involved with In the Room are donated back to PDJF. If you would like to be part of that and support the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund, those jockeys who have given us so, so much over the years, all you have to do is get in touch with me, mike@horseracingradio.net, and I can set you up with the sponsorship information and have you involved with In the Room, because it is a fantastic, fantastic weekly segment, and what a great cause, too, that PDJF is just an incredible organization that does great work for disabled riders. So shoot me an email if you're interested in being a sponsor of that segment, and we'll get you all set up. All right, when I come back, it is time to stroll through racing history with my good friend Kurt Becker, and get ready to take you down the road to the Breeders' Cup, the first of many weekly segments you'll hear on the Horse Racing Radio Network focused on the Breeders' Cup World Championships. I will welcome in trainer Brad Cox coming up at 10:40 Eastern. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Championship racing is now at the legendary Pimlico Racecourse. The Pimlico meet offers live racing Friday through Sunday with a post time of 12:40 p.m. Tune in on Sunday, June 13th for five great stakes with purses totaling $475,000. Wager on Pimlico's Rainbow Pick 6. The carryover has crushed the Maryland state record and is fast approaching the $1 million mark. Don't miss your chance to win big. Rainbow 6 is offered Friday through Sunday at Pimlico. Limited track admissions, or catch the action via live stream at Pimlico.com.
Adina Springs bred and raced the best son of Hall of Famer Ghost Sapper, champion, multiple Grade 1 winner, and fellow Hall of Famer Shaman Ghost, who became the first horse in three decades to reel off this historic Grade 1 double.
It is going to be won by Shaman Ghost! He has won the Woodward!
It's Shaman Ghost, an overwhelming force in the last 16th of a mile. Shaman Ghost has beaten Midnight Storm.
Seeing is believing with Shaman Ghost. Learn more at AdinaStallions.com.
The Spring Summer Meet is live now at Gulfstream Park. Live racing Thursday through Sunday through September 26th. Look forward to the Summit of Speed on Saturday, July 3rd, and the FTBOA Florida Sire Stakes Series, which begins July 31st. Stay in on the action from the comfort of your mobile phone using First Bet, the official app of Gulfstream Park. For the stakes schedule, tips and analysis, and seat reservations, visit GulfstreamPark.com. On-site tickets are limited, so book your seats now.
Hi, this is Calvin Burrow. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
They're approaching the top of the stretch. The mile and 37 and 2 Conquistador Cielo has complete control of this field by about 5 lengths. Linkage on the outside, High Ascent on the inside. Those two now heads apart. Gaining ground on the rail is Illuminate. On the outside, here comes Gato del Sol, but they're far back. Conquistador Cielo, complete control of this Belmont Stakes, has the field by 15 lengths, maybe 20 lengths. Gato del Sol is second.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on a very busy Saturday morning. Happy Belmont Stakes Day to everyone throughout HRN Nation. Conquistador Cielo, what an effort that was in the 1982 running of the Test of the Champion, the Belmont Stakes. Huge, huge effort. Trained by Woody Stevens, ridden by Lafitte Pinkai Jr. It was the first of three consecutive wins in the Belmont for Lafitte. It was the first of five consecutive wins for the great Woody Stevens in the Belmont Stakes. He won it in 82 with Conquistador Cielo. Came back in 83 with Caveat. 1984, it was Swale. 1985, Creme Fresh. And 1986, Danzig Connection. We talk about Todd Pletcher being a three-time Belmont Stakes winner. They haven't been in succession. I think that's a record that's never going to be broken. I know we say that, and eventually somebody comes along and breaks a record. But, boy, you think about five consecutive Belmont Stakes winners for the great Woody Stevens. That's unbelievable. And Tom Leach will be part of our broadcast team this afternoon with our coverage of the Belmont that begins at 5 o'clock Eastern. Pointed out to me in the production meeting yesterday that Conquistador Cielo, who, as I mentioned, was ridden by Lafitte Pinkai Jr., was scheduled to be ridden by Eddie Maple. But Eddie was hurt the day before, and so Woody reached out to Lafitte, who was on the West Coast. Lafitte took the red eye cross-country to get to Belmont Park, and it turned out to be a pretty good decision for Lafitte Pinkai Jr. as he won with Conquistador Cielo, and again, his first of three consecutive wins. Lafitte, Woody Stevens, Conquistador Cielo, they all play an interest in the history of our sport. And Kurt Becker will take you down at racing history and a little bit of a stroll through racing history in this next segment, where he takes a look at another horse who has certainly played a major role as well.
Hello, I'm Kurt Becker. Thanks for joining me as I take another stroll through racing history, presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. 40 years ago on this weekend, Pleasant Colony entered the starting gate as the 4-5 favorite for the 113th running of the Belmont Stakes. He had already won the Kentucky Derby and the Preakness, and he stood on the brink of becoming Thoroughbred Racing's 12th Triple Crown winner, but it was not meant to be. Instead, the winner of the 1981 Belmont would be a horse who had skipped the first two legs of the Triple Crown, was trained by a man who had lived in his brother's shadow, and was ridden by a 22-year-old jockey who had grown up just a few blocks from Belmont Park. The horse's name was Summing. Foaled April 16, 1978 in Kentucky, Summing was from the seventh crop sired by Verbatim, who stood for $5,000 at Elmendorf Farm. Summing's sire and dam both descended from 1875 Epsom Derby winner Gallopan, and the double shot of 19th century stamina in that pedigree would serve Summing well in the mile and a half Belmont. Described as a handsome bay and also as a medium-sized, powerful, and placid colt, Summing failed to impress on the racetrack early in his career. In fact, he won just twice in eight starts as a juvenile and then began his three-year-old campaign in much the same fashion, winning twice in his first eight outings of 1981. A homebred for New York City native Charles Wilson Jr., Summing was trained by Luis Barrera. Luis had worked as an assistant for many years to his brother Laz Barrera, but he had struggled to establish his own identity. Summing, however, was about to change all of that. After losses by a combined 30 lengths in the Whirl Away and Gotham Stakes in New York and a five-length defeat in the Illinois Derby, Summing began to show signs of improvement when winning the Grade 3 Hill Print Stakes on the grass at Belmont Park under jockey Angel Cordero. Some 19 days later on Memorial Day, Summing was entered in the Grade 3 Pennsylvania Derby on the dirt at Keystone, the facility known today as Parks Racing and Casino. And he would have a new jockey. Cordero was unable to ride that day in Pennsylvania because he was committed back in New York to ride Fapiano in the Grade 1 Metropolitan. So instead, Barrera called on 22-year-old rider George Martins, who had won the Eclipse Award as Outstanding Apprentice Jockey just 5 years earlier. And as the field turned for home in that 1981 Pennsylvania Derby, Martins gave Summing the perfect rail-skimming ride. Jack Lamar gives us the call.
Leaving the eighth pole, anybody's horse race. Summing along the rail has the lead. Sportin' Life, Classic Go-Go, pairs the tab all closing in. In deep stretch, Summing is doggedly holding on to the lead. Summing wins the Pennsylvania Derby by a length and a half.
Summing won at odds of 36-1 that afternoon, and Barrera believed the colt had earned a shot at the Belmont Stakes. For Martins, that would be a dream come true, to ride in the Belmont, having grown up in Elmont, New York, and having spent much of his childhood at Belmont Park watching his dad ride races. Sent off the third betting choice for the Belmont at odds of 7-1, Summing once again made a move up the rail to take the lead, this time with a half mile left to go. As the field turned for home, he was in front by four lengths. Marshall Cassidy brings them home.
Summing has the lead by two.
Summing held off the late rally of Highland Blade to win the Belmont Stakes by a neck, with Pleasant Colony another length and a half back in third. Summing denied Pleasant Colony a triple crown, and he became the third consecutive horse to win the Belmont after skipping both the Kentucky Derby and the Preakness. Summing would suffer through a difficult campaign that summer at Saratoga because of ankle issues, finishing off the board in both the Jim Dandy and the Travers. He would be retired following the Jockey Club Gold Cup in October with a career record of 7 wins in 23 starts and $600,000 in earnings. Following 10 seasons of stallion duty at Jonabell Farm in Lexington, where his credits included Eclipse champion juvenile filly Epitome from his third crop, Summing eventually relocated to California. He died there in 2008 at the age of 30. We remember Summing on the 40th anniversary of his victory in the Belmont Stakes. Please join me again next week as I take another stroll through racing history, presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. For HRRN, I'm Kurt Becker.
What a story. Such a great sport, isn't it? Yeah, so many great stories behind the stories in thoroughbred racing, and that's certainly one of them. My thanks to Kurt Becker and to Lane's End and Keeneland for making those weekly stroll through racing history segments possible. One thing I neglected to mention as I was telling you the story of Conquistador Cielo and how Lafitte Pincay Jr. came to get them out after Eddie Maple was injured the day before, it kind of ties in to this year's Belmont, because Known Agenda, if you haven't heard yet, Irad Ortiz Jr., who is scheduled to ride Known Agenda, was injured in a spill on Thursday at Belmont. He is going to be okay. He's back home out of the hospital. He's going to be out a couple of weeks. His brother, Jose Ortiz, has been named to ride Known Agenda today. So he will be aboard. That is news that just came out a short time ago. Todd Pletcher announcing it will be Jose Ortiz. And I mentioned this earlier in the program. If you didn't hear it, do yourself a favor and look up the video that somebody had posted. I saw it on Twitter. I'm sure it's out there in other places, of Jose Ortiz running down the stretch after that race. Jose was in the race too. Running down the stretch to check on his brother who was laying on the track. He was taken off in a stretcher. You can only imagine how scary that was for Jose, seeing his brother laying there, knowing the dangers that every jockey goes through every time they get a leg up. And that's why I'm so passionate about those in-the-room segments with Sean Clancy and the fact that they benefit PDJF. And PDJF is the official charity of the Horse Racing Radio Network, because I've gotten to know so many of these riders over the years. I've been very privileged to get to know so many of them in my time on radio. And every time those jockeys get a leg up, they don't know if they're coming back. And maybe that sounds a little bit extreme, but when you look at how dangerous this sport can be, it's 100% true. They don't know if they're going to end up in a wheelchair at some point during that race because of an incident that occurs. They just don't know. That's why the PDJF is so important to thoroughbred racing. And that's why we're big supporters, and that's why those in-the-room segments are so important. I'm so passionate about those, as is former jockey Sean Clancy, who hosts those every week. But Jose Ortiz picking up the mount for his brother. Thankfully, Irod will be okay. Great story there, but how cool would it be if Jose Ortiz, and I told you that, okay, Lafitte Pincay picked up the mount aboard Conquistador Cielo. He won three in a row. Maybe this starts three in a row for Jose Ortiz after picking up the mount on Known Agenda. Maybe it starts a stretch for Todd Pletcher. Don't think he'll get to five with Woody Stevens, but hey, you never know. He's about the best in the sport right now is Todd Pletcher, certainly among them. Known Agenda, three-year-old son of Hillendale stallion Curlin, a horse that drew the one hole in the Kentucky Derby, had some trouble, didn't get into a position going into the first turn. I think you have to take a long look at him in this Belmont Stakes later today. The poll question today, Ron Bauer, the Preakness winner, not getting much respect. I think a lot of people probably scared off by the 3 weeks coming back from the Preakness. Maybe you're just not a Ron Bauer believer. You think that that field in the Preakness wasn't all that great. But, hey, let's face it. You had the Derby winner in there in Medina Spirit, and you had Midnight Bourbon, who's proven to be a solid horse. But I think this is a much tougher assignment for Ron Bauer, and that's probably why a lot of you don't think that he's going to be the one to win the Belmont today. Hot Rod Charlie, Rock Your World, those are the two horses that seem to have the most early zip. I think Francisco de Ina has enough early pace where he can be in the mix early. Not sure if he's as quick as the other two that I just mentioned, but he can be in the mix early. You'll have Essential Quality. I think Essential Quality and Known Agenda could sit the perfect trips in here. Ron Bauer won't be far back either. It's just a matter of whether Ron Bauer is good enough to win this race in a mile and a half, coming back on 3 weeks rest. But I think Essential Quality and Known Agenda sit the perfect trip in behind those speed horses like Hot Rod Charlie, Rock Your World, and Francisco de Ina. I think it sets up for those two, and I think that that's probably what you're looking at. And by the way, how about the race before the Manhattan? That's part of our coverage at 5 o'clock Eastern today, too, here on the network. Colonel Liam getting a rematch with Domestic Spending. What a show they put on at Churchill Downs 5 weeks ago in the Turf Classic. That was the race preceding the Kentucky Derby. Now we get a chance to see him in the race preceding the Belmont. They dead-heated that day. That's going to be a fantastic rematch in the Manhattan coming up. Post time for that one, 5:38. Post time for the Belmont, 6:49. You'll hear both of those races exclusively on radio with us this afternoon in partnership with NBC Sports Audio Network. Coverage beginning 5 o'clock Eastern on affiliates across the country, SiriusXM Satellite Radio, and streaming worldwide on our website. You can go there and stream us at horseracingradio.net. When I come back, we kick off our Road to the Breeders' Cup series, and I do it with who else? The man who won four Breeders' Cup races a year ago, trainer Brad Cox. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Spring Meet is back at Churchill Downs with live racing now through June 26th. And new this year, Stephen Foster Day has moved to a daytime card with seven total stakes races that include the Breeders' Cup Winning Your In Florida Lee for the Distaff Division and the Stephen Foster for the Classic Division. Churchill also has Twilight Racing starting at 5 p.m. each Thursday throughout the remainder of the meet. Add in the strong purses and you're not going to want to miss the Spring Meet at Churchill Downs. Get your tickets today at churchilldowns.com.
Pin Oak Stud's Alternation ranks highly among Kentucky's fourth crop sires by percentage of black type winners from runners. With nearly $5.5 million in earnings to date, Alternation was represented by five black type horses in 2020. His brilliant Kentucky Oaks winner, Serengeti Empress, won the Grade 1 Ballerina at Saratoga and was runner-up in the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint. First or second in six Grade 1 events, Serengeti Empress amassed over $2.1 million. Alternation stands at Pin Oak Stud.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
A Central Quality is still third and still moving at the leaders from the outside. Final furlong of the juvenile. Essential Quality coming forward for the lead. Late run from Keep Me In Mind. Hot Rod Charlie to the inside. Essential Quality and Luis Saez have won the TVG Breeders' Cup Juvenile.
That's future Darley Stallion Essential Quality, a winner of five of six career starts, including that impressive win in the 2020 Breeders' Cup Juvenile. He is the morning line favorite in this afternoon's Grade 1 Belmont Stakes, and that makes Essential Quality the son of Tappet out of a half to Eclipse champion Folklore, your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Learn more about all the Darley Stallions by visiting DarleyAmerica.com. Darley, go faster.
This is trainer Chad Brown, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Aunt Pearl, final furlong, leads it by five. Editor-at-Large up the inside second. Campanelli is in third. And then a late charge from Miss Amulet and Mother Pearl well behind Aunt Pearl, who wins it. Essential Quality coming forward for the lead. Late run from Keep Me In Mind. Hot Rod Charlie to the inside. Essential Quality and Luis Saez have won the TVG Breeders' Cup Juvenile. Knicks Go with the lead. Knicks Go by four. Jesus's team runs late down toward the inside of Complexity and then Sharp Samurai on the outside. But it's Knicks Go. Knicks Go. Front-running victory for Joel Rosario and Knicks Go in the Big Ass Fans Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile. Valiant's trying to catch Monomoy Girl. Late run from Dunbar Road to third. Monomoy Girl in front. Monomoy Girl wins the distaff by two lengths on the line.
Well, how about that quartet of Breeders' Cup winners for trainer Brad Cox that took place last year? And he's with me now here on the Horse Racing Radio Network as we begin to go down the road to the Breeders' Cup World Championships November 5th and 6th at Del Mar in Southern California. This segment brought to you each week by Breeders' Cup. Brad, that little montage we just heard of those four wins from last year. I mean, come on, one win is great, two wins is spectacular, three wins is amazing, and four wins, Brad Cox is just showing off at that point, isn't he?
Well, I don't know about that, but, you know, it's first of all, thanks for having me on. But, yeah, no, it was a spectacular weekend. Horses showed up and ran the races. And, you know, they were all well meant. Obviously, you know, I think three of the four were favored. And, you know, I was very proud of our team. And you know, we were able to execute in some key races, and it was a great weekend.
Yeah, all four of those horses still in training, too. Give me a quick update on Aunt Pearl and Monomoy Girl.
Well, Aunt Pearl, you know, no secret there. She bled a little bit in the Edgewood. We gave her a little bit of time after that, just relaxing. She's hanging out at Windstar Farm right now. And Monomoy Girl as well. She's getting a little bit of a break. You know, she trained for a few weeks after the Apple Blossom there at Churchill. Just wasn't super happy with the way she was moving, thought she needed a little break. And, you know, she'd been in training a while, so she's getting a well-deserved break. She's going to get an evaluation this week, and hopefully, you know, we can put a game plan together in the near future with her.
You know, I'm running a poll question this morning, as I do every Saturday morning here on the show, and I asked our listeners to tell me who they think is going to be the one to win the 153rd Belmont Stakes this afternoon. And right now, 52% of the vote coming in for Essential Quality. He is by far the leader in that category right now. So you've got HRN Nation in your corner. I'm assuming, Brad Cox, that you feel like he's sitting on a pretty big race too.
Yeah, absolutely. We obviously wouldn't be here if we wasn't happy with the way he's training. And, you know, he's had three works since the
Kentucky Derby. And his last two, you know, this first one was just kind of a maintenance, lame stretch his legs a little bit. But his last two have been very, very good. And he shipped up, and he's really handled things well here at Belmont. He's he had like a mile gallop this morning, and afterwards, I mean, he was feeling good. He was fresh, happy, very intelligent horse, knows it's race day. So, you know, I think he's set up for a big effort. I really, really do. I think he'll like the mile and a half. I'm happy with the post, and, you know, we'll see how it goes.
Kieran McLaughlin joined me earlier in the show, and he, of course, talked about jockey Luis Saez, who he is now his agent. And he said unquestionably that Essential Quality was the best horse in the Kentucky Derby, and had it not been for a little bit of trouble and a wide trip, that he thinks that he was absolutely the best horse in the race and he was the winner. Do you agree with that assessment?
Yeah, I do. I mean, you know, I do look at figures. I know it's not the end all, but you know, I think the figures, some of the figures had him the best horse in the race. And, you know, I think he ran a winning race. And I was very proud of the effort, but you know, I always say you got to have a little racing luck, and I don't feel as though he had it in the Kentucky Derby. It's a race where you really need it, and he just really didn't have it. He didn't have a good trip, a lot of ground loss. No knock on Louis at all. He did a good job of getting him in the position he needed to get him in, but obviously the bump at the beginning, I think, compromised him a bit in order to get the position going into the first turn.
Quite often we hear trainers say that this horse is a Belmont-type horse. This horse is a Derby-type horse. And sometimes you think it's just trainer speak. But with you, with Essential Quality, you thought right away that this horse could be a Belmont-type horse ever since his first workout. That story has been well documented, that you told people after that first work you thought he could be a Belmont-type horse. What is it that makes a horse a quote-unquote Belmont type of horse? Is it pedigree? Is it the way he moves? What is it, Brad?
Well, honestly, I don't know, because I've never had one. So I was just, you know, the thing that caught my eye when his first work was just you know, how fit he was when he came to us and how much stamina he had. Just thought he was, you know, well conditioned. Niall Brennan prepared him, did a great job with him, and he just came to us, and you know, he just stays on. I mean, it's just amazing how he just stays on. You know, if you look back at his it would have been the Breeders' Futurity last year. Louis came back, first time the horse ever run long in his life, second start of his life, and the outrider had to pull him up at the 5/8 pole on the backside. I mean, it's like, wow. You know, Louis come back, he's like, wow, this horse never gets tired. So, you know, obviously stuff like that gives you the confidence to think that he'll go the mile and a half. Obviously, he still has to get the trip, and you never really know till you try, but I feel pretty confident that, you know, he's one that should be able to handle the mile and a half.
Talking with trainer Brad Cox, going down the road to the Breeders' Cup here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Again, you'll hear this segment each week through the Breeders' Cup in November. Brad, I want to talk to you about a couple of the other contenders you have in on the undercard, in particular the horses that are in those Breeders' Cup winning your in races today. But before we do, Mandaloon, massive effort in the Kentucky Derby. There's a good chance that he ends up being the winner of the Kentucky Derby, considering the situation surrounding Medina Spirit and trainer Bob Baffert. I know you said earlier, and I can imagine that's the case, this is not the way you would like to win your first Kentucky Derby, but I'm sure you'll take it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's you know, there's obviously not much of a thrill with it at all. And, you know, I think that's one reason why so many people and myself are attracted to this game, is the thrill it gives you in victory. And, you know, obviously, you know, being placed first through a DQ is not, you know, nothing like, you know, getting to the wire first and having your win picture taken. So, you know, listen, unfortunate circumstances, you know, I'm hopeful that, you know, the business, the whole business, you know, we can learn something from this as far as, you know, I've said, you know, maybe some more pre-race testing may be in line to somehow, especially with you know, very prestigious races such as Grade Ones, you know, maybe where we could, you know, have all the testing done prior to the race somehow, some way. I don't have the answer to that, but you know, I'm hopeful that, you know, something good can come from it, and that would be one idea I would have. Would just, you know, when we lead them over there, we know that everything's clean and clear, and we're ready to go.
Yeah, and as a fellow trainer, I can imagine, Brad, that has to be somewhat difficult for you to watch what's happening here with Bob Baffert, because of the fact that you know, considering withdrawal times are different from state to state, you take every precaution you can when you ship around. You know that one day, you know, maybe that's you sitting in this position where something doesn't come out of the horse's system in time, or the withdrawal times, or you know, all of those things are so confusing in our sport right now. There has to be a better way, doesn't there?
Yeah, there's no doubt. And once again, I'm you know, not one that can, you know, say exactly what needs to happen, but yeah, it needs to be uniform. There's no doubt. State, we you know, uniform with medication. There's no doubt it needs to happen throughout the country or the world or whatever. You know, I do feel like we've adjusted well with the Lasix situation. Obviously, most places we have for graded stakes are now Lasix free, and you know, obviously the 2-year-olds from last year. This is our first Lasix free Triple Crown, and I don't know how long. Obviously, maybe I guess since the 80s or 90s, I'm not sure. But, you know, I think that's all went well. And you know, I do think we all have to get on the same page somehow, some way, as far as, you know, moving forward and just trying to, you know, keep the public, you know, believing in our game. And like I said, you know, pre-race testing would be the biggest thing I think we could somehow orchestrate or organize to, you know, obviously run a cleaner game, I guess you would say.
Where will we see Mandaloon next?
We're pointing him next Sunday at Monmouth for the Pegasus. That's Monmouth's local prep for the Haskell, and that's obviously where it goes, the Haskell. So we, you know, we feel like he does need a race between the Kentucky Derby and the Haskell. We felt like the 6 weeks between the Kentucky Derby, 6 weeks and a day between the Kentucky Derby and the Pegasus made the most sense, and then obviously it's back 5 weeks from Pegasus to Haskell, provided everything goes well in the Pegasus.
Let's walk back through some of the other contenders you have on the undercard today. We talked about Essential Quality in the Belmont. How about Nick's Go coming back in the Hillandale Metropolitan Handicap? Boy, he's a good horse, isn't he?
Yeah, he really is. And I tell you, he's training every bit as well as he was leading up to, say, the Dirt Mile or the Pegasus. You know, when a horse goes to the Middle East and comes back, you really never know how they're going to come back, right? I mean, so many horses have come over there and just never been the same in the afternoon. You know, he's given us all the right signs that he is the same horse before Saudi Arabia trip, and now, you know, obviously he has to show up and do it in the afternoon. But he's given us every indication that he's the same horse. We obviously were pointing for the Steve Sexton Mile, but with the defection of Charlotte didn't give us enough confidence with how well he's training to come up here and try to run in this grade one.
You're going to catch a couple of defections out of that Ogden Phipps today, too, so you get a very small field in there. You have two contenders, Bonnie South and She Dares the Devil. Talk to me about each of them.
They're both doing as well as they could do. Bonnie South really seems like she's improved at four. She's had the one run there at Keeneland in the Double Dog Dare that was a big race. They're both training well. They've actually met before early in their three-year-old season last year, and Bonnie defeated her She Dares the Devil late. So, you know, they're both, you know, I think they're very comparable fillies in regards to talent. They have different styles. Obviously, She Dares the Devil does like to lay close, and Bonnie's more of a, you know, can set off of it a little bit. So, you know, I think we're in a good spot with both of them. I wouldn't be shocked if they're both right there today. They're both doing well. I don't know if – I think maybe the scratch of Swiss Skydiver actually helps She Dares the Devil, where it doesn't complement Bonnie quite as well. But, you know, we'll see. I'm confident they'll both run big races.
Yeah, Swiss Skydiver coming out of the race yesterday. Valiant's coming out as well. So both of those horses going to be scratched. So down to a field of five in the Ogden Phipps, and Brad Cox will have two of the five contenders in there. In the Acorn, you send out Travel Column. We know how good she can be. Tell me about Travel Column and how she's coming into that race.
She's doing well. I'm excited about shortening her up to the mile. You know, she was on the lead in the Kentucky Oaks. She ran a big race, was there, you know, to the eighth pole, and just tired late. You know, was beaten by some really good fillies. Obviously, this is another very good group of fillies as well. You know, she just broke from the one hole. I think we should have a target or two in front of us, and I'm hopeful with a clean trip she'll, you know, be in the mix. She's, you know, she needs to break through and get a grade one. She's grade one place, multiple grade two winners. So, you know, we do need to pick off a grade one with her. We're hopeful that today's the day.
All right, and one more to talk about. That's Caddo River, who comes back, again, shortening up in the Woody Stevens today, which is the third race on the card. Cuts back to 7/8 of a mile. Should hit him square between the eyes, shouldn't it?
Yeah, I believe so. I do feel like he's probably more of a one-turn horse. You know, we had the opportunity to run him in the Kentucky Derby. He obviously qualified with having a big, you know, enough points for the Kentucky Derby. Just felt like a mile and a quarter really wasn't his thing. And you know, as he's trained on, you know, we feel like, you know, he's probably more one-turn horse mile. So, you know, he's got a lot of speed. You know, there is obviously some speed in the race, and I think he drew well. I like the outside post with him shortening back up. He can kind of break and, you know, have a target, and hopefully he can run some horses down late.
Well, I know it's a busy day for you. I'll let you go, Brad. But before I do, you know, you are always very accommodating with me, certainly, but with our entire broadcast team, Tom Leach. You've talked with him a few times. I see you on NBC. I see you doing other radio shows and podcasts and in the print media. I don't know how you keep it all straight. All these horses, all these big races, and yet you still make time for these interviews. I don't know what the secret is, but whatever you're doing, keep it rolling because it's working.
Thanks, Mike. I really appreciate it, and have a good Belmont day.
All right, Brad Cox. Good luck today, Brad, here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Going down the road to the Breeders' Cup, that segment brought to you each week by Breeders' Cup all the way through the World Championships November 5th and 6th at Del Mar in Southern California. I'll get to another break. When I come back, we'll get ready to wrap up this show, and I'll tell you what's ahead this afternoon on the Horse Racing Radio Network. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN, proud to once again be your home for the Triple Crown.
And they're into the stretch with Spun to Run, the wonder catch coming to the eighth pole. Spun to Run drifting out with the lead. Blue Chipper on the inside is second. Omaha Beach has made his way up into third, but Spun to Run has run away. Herod Ortiz and Spun to Run, the real deal of the dirt mile. They won it by 3.5 lengths.
Gainesway Stallion Spun to Run. In the Grade 1 Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile, he defeated a loaded field that included multiple Grade 1 winners, Omaha Beach and Improbable. His brilliant speed figures were among the fastest of any 3-year-old at a mile or more, while earning multiple triple-digit buyers up to 110 and running a zero on the thoroughgrass 5 times. Spun to Run hails from the legendary Danzig sire line, a multiple graded stakes winner, millionaire, and Breeders' Cup champion. Great milers make great stallions. Spun to Run, standing at Gainesway.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Fans, join us early on Saturday as the third and final jewel in racing's Triple Crown, the Belmont Stakes, will be simulcast from New York along with a tremendous undercard. Admission gates will open at 8 a.m. with a clubhouse opening at 9 a.m. Infield admission gates will open at 10 a.m. That's all on Belmont Stakes Day this Saturday. First live race post time on Saturday and Sunday will be at 1 o'clock. And please note, there will be a mandatory payout in Sunday's 20-cent Rainbow Pick 6 jackpot. Although Santa Anita is now open to the public, please visit SantaAnita.com/open for reserved seating, as walk-up admission is not yet available. And fans, Santa Anita's grandstand paddock room has been reopened. Please visit our website for details. If you can't join us in person, all of Santa Anita's races are still available free of charge at SantaAnita.com/live, and you can watch and wager via First Bet. That's First.com/bet.
Hi, this is Doug O'Neill. My favorite radio show is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Welcome back. Coverage of the Belmont Stakes on HRRN coming up 5 o'clock Eastern this afternoon. That's in partnership with NBC Sports Audio Network. Make sure you join us coast to coast and worldwide. If you haven't seen our affiliate list yet and you're looking for a station near you, just head over to our website, horseracingradio.net. If you want to listen throughout North America on Sirius XM, you can do that too. Sirius XM available free for the next few days. So take advantage of that. Tell all your friends to tune in to us on Sirius 219, XM 201, wherever they might be throughout the United States and throughout North America and anywhere around the world, because you can stream us worldwide with our free live streaming available on our website, horseracingradio.net. Busy, busy show. My thanks to the Big A, Anthony Stabile, for kicking it off, to Kieran McLaughlin for being here with me, to Patrick O'Neill, who took time to talk about Hot Rod Charlie. Byron King from the Blood Horse was also here. You heard from trainer Todd Pletcher. You heard from Hall of Fame jockey Steve Cawthon and Brad Cox just a short time ago. Busy 3 hours, but I hope you enjoy your Belmont Stakes Day. Great racing leading up to the Belmont and, of course, the 153rd test of the champion coming up shortly before 7 o'clock Eastern, and you'll hear it right here exclusively with us on the radio on HRRN. My thanks to my producers, Lee Delapina in our Lexington studio, and to Chauncey for handling all of our social media. Again, all back together again, 5 o'clock Eastern, with coverage of the Belmont Stakes this afternoon. I'll talk to you then. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, saying, go Steelers. Hey, 100 days to kickoff. Let's do this. Here we go.